Senator.
Mr. President.
Senator Pogamiller.
I move that further proceedings under the roll call be dispensed with and the sergeant-at-arms be instructed to bring in absent members.
On the motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Today's chaplain is the Reverend Craig Richter from the Grace Lutheran Church in St. Paul, and then remain standing for the Pledge of Allegiance.
Good to see you. It was in the spring of the year, a few years back, that a woman from our church, Marilyn Johnson, died. And I remember that it was the spring of the year because as we were sitting on the front porch and I was talking with her husband, one of the street sweepers went by. And I was watching as one of those big machines went by our church this morning, recognized that the government now officially recognizes that spring has come. Well, her husband said, "Here I am with this terrible loss, and the world just keeps on turning." And I imagine that probably all of us have been in that situation at one time or another when we've thought the same thing. Well, this morning, Senator Linda Higgins' mother died. And so she's down in Iowa where her mom was, and maybe she's thinking that kind of thing too. And yet here you are, and you have your work to do. Let us pray. Lord God, we come before you this morning knowing that things are not easy in the lives of other people. There are those who mourn the death of a mother. And while Senator Higgins might experience a change and even a stop in things that she has always counted on, we know that here other things do not change. We think of her. We entrust her to you, just as she entrusts her mother to you. We ask, God, that you bless her and that you bless these people who gather here today to do their work, for they know that there are pressing things that must be attended to. Life does not change for any of us, or it does not stop. So whether it is a parent who has died or a child who is ill or other problems that beset us, we still have things that we must attend to. Please give these people good judgment, patience with one another, and awareness of the people they serve, that we might do our best no matter what it is we do. We entrust ourselves to you this day. Amen.
Thank you. Nice. Mm-hmm. Nice. Very nice. Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, liberty and justice for all. Good to see you. Thank you. Secretary will take the roll.
Anderson, Bach, Berglund, Betzel, Bonhoff, Carlson, Chaudhry, Clark, Cohen, Day, Dibble, Dill, Dahl, Erickson, Ropes, Fishbach, Foley, Fredrickson, Gerlach, Gimsey, Han, Higgins, Ingebrigtsen, Johnson, Youngbauer, Koch, Coring, Kubli, Langseth, Larson, Latz, Limmer, Laurie, Lynch, Marty, Metzen, Michelle, Moi, Murphy, Neville, Olsen, Olson G, Olson M, Ortman, Pappas, Parasol, Pogamiller, Prentner, Solon, Rest, Roebling, Rosen, Rummel, Saltzman, Saxhog, Scheid, Senjum, Sharon, Sieben, Skoy, Skogan, Sparks, Stumpf, Tomasoni, Torres Ray, Vandeveer, Vickerman, Wergen, and Wieger. Quorum is present.
Quorum is present. First order of business is messages from the House.
Mr. President, I have the honor to announce the passage by the House of the following Senate files here with return Senate file numbers 1168 and 1294, signed Alvin A. Mathewitz, Chief Clerk of the House of Representatives. And also, Mr. President, I have the honor to announce the passage by the House of the following House files here with transmitted House files 1033 and 946, signed Alvin A. Mathewitz, Chief Clerk of the House of Representatives.
Next order of business is first reading of House bills. There's one on today's agenda. Without objection, referred to the committee as indicated. First reading. Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. President, I move that House File 946 be laid on the table.
On the motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Next order is reports of committees. There's one printed on today's addendum.
Mr. President.
Senator Pogemiller.
I move that the committee report printed in today's addendum be adopted. Committee reports on the addendum be adopted.
There are five on today's addendum. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion prevails. There's one Senate bill on today's addendum, number 966. Without objection, second reading of Senate bills. Next order of business is motions and resolutions. There's one resolution on today's agenda. Without objection, the resolution will be sent to the Rules Committee. Excuse me, there's one to be read.
Senator Senja moves that Senate File 289, number 75, on general orders be stricken and re-referred to the Committee on State and Local Government Operations and Oversight.
All in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Senator Pogemiller.
President, on motions and resolutions, I'd like to move to introductions again. Or take up introductions.
Staying on motions, the next order of business be Senate bill introductions. They are on today's agenda. Without objection, first reading of Senate bills.
Mr. President.
Senator Pogemiller.
I'd like to move to take House File 946 from the table. Members, this is the transportation bill. We want to put the Senate file language into the House file.
On the motion. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion prevails.
Mr. President, I move that an urgency be declared in the meaning of Article 4, Section 19 of the Constitution of Minnesota with respect to House File 946 and that the rules of the Senate be so far suspended as to give House File 946 its second and third reading and place it on its final passage.
On the motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Second reading.
House File number 946.
Second reading. Senator Murphy. Do you have a delete everything motion to make?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I would move that House File 946, on House File 946, delete everything after the enacting clause, delete the title of House File 946, and insert the language after the enacting clause and the title of Senate File 1986, the third engrossment.
On the Senator Murphy motion. You're putting the Senate language on the House bill. Is that correct?
That's correct, Mr. President.
Maybe give us a brief explanation what...
Mr. President, this is the Senate's version of the transportation bill that we took up last Friday.
Senator, Okay. All those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. You got to wait till Secretary will give Senate File 946 its third reading.
House File 946, a bill for an act relating to transportation finance, appropriating money for transportation, Metropolitan Council, and public safety activities, etc.
Mr. President.
Senator Pogermiller.
Members, on your desk is the roll call vote on Senate File 1986 from Friday. You may want to just double check that. This would be, you would want to take the same vote today, presumably, because this is the Senate language on the House file now. For the Omnibus Transportation Bill. It should be on your desk, the copy of the roll call. And, Mr. President, I'd like to impose a call of the Senate.
Senate's under call.
Mr. President.
Senator Pogermiller.
I'd move that further proceedings under the roll call be dispensed with and Sergeant-at-Arms be instructed to bring in the absent members.
On the motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Secretary will take the roll. Secretary will close the roll. There'll be 39 ayes and 24 nays. The bill is passed and its title agreed to.
Mr. President, I'd move that we take up the consent calendar.
We want to do the regular calendar first. We've got About three bills on the calendar, if you'd like to.
Bills. On the calendar? Okay, I'm sorry. I move that we take up the regular calendar then, the regular calendar first.
On the motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. First bill on the calendar will be House File 736, third reading.
House File 736, a bill for an act relating to emergency medical services, changing the name of an award and incentive program.
Secretary will take the roll. Can't slip it. All senators, have you voted? Desire to vote? Secretary, send you. We'll close the roll. We had 63 ayes and 0 nays. The bill is passed and its title agreed to. Now, let me again remind senators there's four more votes to be taken in kind of a fast order, so I'd recommend you stay close to your chairs. Next bill on the calendar will be Senate File 167. Secretary will give Senate File 167 its third reading.
Senate File 167, a bill for an act relating to unemployment insurance, making various policy, housekeeping, and style changes to the Minnesota Employment Insurance Law, etc.
Secretary will take the roll. All senators, have you voted? Desire to vote. The secretary will close the roll. There being 48 ayes and 15 nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. The next order of business, we're going to the Senate consent calendar. There are four bills on the calendar.
Mr. President, I'd move that on motions resolution. I'd motions. Move that we take up the consent calendar.
State on motion. On that motion, all in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. The first bill on the consent calendar be House File 1441, Senator Scheid.
Thank you, Mr. President. This is extremely technical. This actually just changes some language to reflect current terminology for guardians and conservators and personal representatives. The old language was executor or administrator. We're changing that to conservator or conservator.
Any discussion? Or representative. Secretary will give Senate File 1441 its third reading.
House File 1441, a bill for an act relating to trust companies, limited purpose companies, making non-substantive term changes.
Secretary will take the roll. Hey, Warren. All senators having voted desire to vote, secretary will close the roll. Being 62 ayes, 0 nays, the bill is passed with its title agreed to. The next bill on the consent calendar is Senate File 156, Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senate File 156 was brought to us by the Military Order of the Purple Heart in the state chapter of Minnesota. They have a nationwide program to designate one highway system that would cross an entire state as a project for their military organization. As you know, Purple Heart veterans are veterans that suffered a wound in any type of military conflict in the United States. This bill would designate Interstate Highway 94 in its entirety as a Purple Heart Trail. This designation, I believe, gives proper respect to the sacrifices made by our veterans. I'll stand for questions.
Any discussion on Senate File 156? Seeing none, the Secretary will give Senate File 156 its third reading.
Senate File 156, a bill for an act relating to highways, designating I-94 as Purple Heart Trail.
He will take the roll. All senators having voted, desire to vote, secretary will close the roll. It's 61 ayes, 0 nays. The bill is passed and the title agreed to. Next bill. Before that, Senator Wergen votes aye. It'll be 62 ayes and 0 nays. And Senator Bach votes aye. 63 ayes, 0 nays. The bill is passed and its title agreed to. Next bill on the consent calendar be Senate File 1181, Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senate File 1181 is a very simple bill. All it does is put into statute things that are already in rulemaking to add the information on your driver's license that includes license, class, endorsements, and your restrictions. So I'd appreciate support from the body.
Discussion on Senate File 1181. Seeing none, the Secretary will give Senate File 1181 its third reading.
Senate File 1181, a bill for an act relating to driver's licenses, modifying required information on driver's license.
Secretary will take the roll. All senators having voted, desire to vote. Secretary will close the roll. It's 62 ayes and 2 nays. The bill is passed and it's title agreed to. The last bill on the consent calendar will be Senate File 1525. Senator Dahl.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senate File 1525 is an agency bill that modifies state pipeline safety code to comply with federal minimum standards. The state's adopted all the other federal pipeline safety code and all its aspects, and except for the penalties for violations. That's what this legislation does. It's to bring it up to federal minimum standards.
Discussion on Senate file 1525. Seeing none, the Secretary will give us Senate file 1525, its third reading.
Senate file 1525, a bill for an act relating to public safety, increasing fines relating to pipeline violations.
Secretary will take the roll.
What's he going to designate these two for special orders? I'm going to let...
All senators having voted, desire to vote, Secretary will close the roll. 60 ayes, 2 nays, the bill is passed and it's title agreed to. Anything? Senator Pogabiller.
Is there other work that the desk would like to process before special orders? Okay.
Senator Moi is going to chair.
Madam President, pursuant to Rule 26, I designate the following bills to be special ordered for immediate consideration. Senate File 846, the deficiency bill, which is number 82 on general orders, and Senate File 2095, the K-12 funding bill, which is number 80 on general orders, and do it in that order. Deficiency first, K-12 second. And I would yield to Senator Cohan.
You don't have to do anything like that. Name, Senator. Senator Cohan.
Thank you, Madam President. Senate File 846 is the deficiency bill. We have vetted all of these quite carefully. Members can find the particular appropriations with the bill. The tax court, I can go through very quickly. And particularly for members who are new here, the deficiency bill is offered every year. And what happens is that when you, in particular, come close to the end of a biennium, you will find that there are some deficiencies that have come up for one reason or another. Something was unexpected. And so the attempt is to reconcile that with where the budget is. So the bill you have in front of you is one-time money representing a total of $10,379,000. And if you, I can certainly answer questions about a lot of the particulars. Let me just point out that in the case of the deficiencies that deal with, say, the Judicial Standards Board and the Campaign Finance Board, they ended up with significant cases that they were involved with that cost a little bit more money. The Board of Public Defense had a huge appellate matter that involved hundreds of hours of court reporter time that was not expected. That's represented by the transcript costs. In particular, members, I would bring your attention to the Greater Minnesota Transit deficiency of $522,000 and the significant deficiency of $7,847,000 for Metropolitan Transit. What that represents is the forecast for the MVEST transfer this year that passed on the ballot. Because the forecast for what was there with MVEST ended up being lower than what was expected, those particular programs, which are done through the Met Council and through MnDOT, ended up with a deficiency that was not covered. So those are that's how we handle the deficiency bill. This is not something that's done where people start adding various appropriations to it. Rather, it's a bill that comes through the Department of Finance, and so the deficiency before it goes into a bill is one vetted by the Department of Finance and then by our fiscal staff as well to ensure that it matches up dollar for dollar with what the actual deficiency is. And I'd be happy to answer questions about the particular deficiencies in the bill.
Any discussions? Seeing none, the Secretary will give Senate File
46. Right.
Oh, Senator Day.
I would like to, Madam President, I'd like to point out to members that
There's a $7.8 million deficit in transit. Hopefully Senator Dibble's listening, and even though we hear about all the great ridership and everything, we have a little deficit. I'm surely going to vote for the bill, and just wanted to point that out.
Any discussions?
Madam President.
Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Madam President, and Senator Day, for pointing that out. The reason is because, of course, transit has been so successful, and we haven't been funding it appropriately and relying on sources of revenue that are declining, namely the motor vehicle sales tax. We're not selling as many cars these days as we have been.
Senator Day.
Madam Chairman, you know, you've all been listening to our how the light rail is just, you know, can hardly find a place to sit. So this would just basically tell you that there's plenty of room in a transit system for everybody.
The Secretary will give Senate 846 its third reading.
Senate File 846, a bill for an act relating to state government providing deficiency funding for certain state agencies and appropriating money.
The Secretary will take the roll. And all the members who voted who wants to vote, the Secretary will close the roll. There being 59 ayes and 2 nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. Oh, sorry. Senator Parasol is an aye vote. Senator Pearson and Senator Cornyn vote aye. Being 61 ayes and 2 nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. Senator Stumpf, Senate File 2095.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Senate File 2095 is the education finance bill, and I would like to make a few comments about kind of an overview, and then I would ask Madam Chair if I may offer an amendment that addresses a couple of issues. Before I go through the appropriations and the levy tracking sheets and then some of the other information. On your desk, you will see a number of different handouts as well, and I'll try to point those out as I go through. The education bill, that finance bill that you have before you can be characterized in a couple of ways. Two main issues that we try to address. And I want to step back just for a moment that in 2003, when we had the severe budget crisis, what we did in 2003 was to borrow upwards of $1 billion from our schools. At that time, that was done through various shifts and withholding funds from our school districts. And our school districts have been going through a financial roller coaster ever since 2003. In 2004, we passed legislation to reinstate those cuts when the cash flow account was full and when the surplus reserve fund was full, that any extra surplus money that we had would go back to pay back those shifts and borrowings that we did from our schools. The one problem that we did not address back in 2003 was how to fund special education. That was not addressed. In fact, we exacerbated the problem by removing an inflation factor, and consequently our school districts have suffered immensely since 2003. What this proposal that you have before you is address that unpaid bill that the state of Minnesota has to our districts. What this means to our districts is that it will free up money for programs across the districts. Our districts do not have the choice of not paying their bills. They have the choice of cutting programs or raising property taxes. And that brings us to the second main part of this bill, which is roughly $110 million property tax reduction across the state of Minnesota. So with this proposal, we pay our bill to allow a more stable funding for our districts, and we reduce property taxes across the state. So I think that's the way I would like to characterize this. It's not as much as I would like to have had. As you know, the target for K-12 education was $498 million. What we did was basically to free up a few extra dollars, was make some reductions from within the spending areas so that we could achieve those two goals. Madam Chair, or Madam President, and members, I would like to point out the different spreadsheets, but before I do, let me offer the A21 amendment so that those spreadsheets are consistent with the proposal that you have before you.
Senator Stump on the A21 amendment.
Madam Chair,
Senator Stump moves to amend Senate File 2095 as follows, page 13. This is the A21 amendment.
Madam President, members, as any large appropriation bill, and this one is no different, very complex, and so we have a number of technical changes that need to be addressed as we look at this bill the way it should be. The amendment lines basically the first from 1.1 through 1.11 are technical changes to reflect the some amendments that were put on in the tax committee. Lines 1.14 to 1.22 is the new language that gets reinstated, addressing two districts that are in statutory operating debt. And lines 1.25 to lines 1.33 basically are the amendments, or the portion of the amendment to address the reinstating of the charter school startup aid for those districts that are in process of becoming charter schools in this next year. And then 1.34 and 5 and page 2 are small base adjustments to the Perpich School and to the state academies in Faribault. And Madam Chair, if I could make one verbal change on line 2.2, if I could delete page 111 and insert page 103. If I could incorporate that change.
Senator Stumpf, can you give us that oral amendment again?
Madam President and members, on page 2 of the amendment, on line 2.2, after page, delete 111, which is the page number, and insert 103.
The Secretary will note the oral amendment.
Senator Stumpf is moving to amend his amendment to Senate File 2095 as follows on page 2 of his amendment, line 2.2, strike 111 and insert 103. Is that correct, Senator?
That's correct.
All in favor say aye.
Madam President.
All opposed? Senator Hand.
Thank you, Madam President. I just wanted some clarification on the amendment, and we wondered if Senator Stumpf would answer a question of clarification.
Senator Hand, is that the amendment to the amendment, or do you want to speak
Amendment itself. Did we just vote on the amendment to the amendment? I'm okay with the amendment to the amendment, so I'll ask my question on the amendment itself.
Let us take the vote on the amendment to the amendment first. All right, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? The motion prevails. Now on the 821 amendment. Senator Stumpf, have you finished explaining the 821 amendment?
Madam President, yes, I did.
Any discussions of the 821 amendment?
Madam President.
Senator Hand.
Thank you, Madam President. And would Senator Stumpf answer a question to clarify?
Senator Stumpf will yield.
Thank you, Madam President. And Senator Stumpf, I just wanted to make sure I understood. You mentioned in your remarks on this amendment that there was some language to make some changes to the startup aid for the charter schools that was affected by the bill as it originally came through committee. And could you just, I was trying to follow it, and there was a little noise in here, and I just want to make sure I understood what you're doing. Could you go back and maybe just re-explain that so I'm clear on what's going on here?
Senator Stumpf.
Madam President and members, and Senator Hand, certainly, on page 1, if you notice on lines 1.25, we delete 241,000 and insert 1,896,000. So this is the reinserting of the startup aid for those schools that would be underneath the 150 cap, and that language goes through consistent up to line 1.33.
Senator Hand.
And thank you, Madam President. And Senator Stumpf, so roughly $2 million, $1.8 million, is going to go back to the startup aid. I'm guessing, is that causing a consequent reduction in the rest of the funding to the bill, maybe for the special education payments? And I guess second question is, was the cap language that's limiting the charter schools to 150, has that been changed?
Madam President and Senator Hand, no, that has not been changed. And the appropriation to cover this increase came in, if you remember, in committee we have the Education Improvement Fund. The Education Improvement Fund, as it left our division, was $75 million, and that was increased in the Tax Committee to make that change.
Any further discussions in the 821 amendment? All those in favor of the motion to amend, say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? The motion prevails.
Madam President and members, I would like to, if you would take up in your packet, you have a number of spreadsheets and tracking sheets. I numbered them so that they're a little bit easier to get your hands on the right one, because the print sometimes is rather small. If you look at number 1, and I'll make a couple, point out a couple of the larger areas, and you can look down the list. This spreadsheet is a little more unique than normal years because of the number of changes that we are making in the area of special education. So across the top, you'll notice that there are actually 3 biannual budgets that we are dealing with. On the far left-hand corner or side, you'll see the 06-07 biennial budget. And then the fourth column in is really, it's titled Difference Senate February Forecast. That's the one that I'll refer to as I go through this. And then, of course, the 08-09 and the 10 and 11 biennial budgets, those are the ones that we normally would deal with. There are a few changes when you look at the on line 8 and 9, we made some reductions to free up money for our property tax relief reductions. We have recaptured some growth in the area of the QComp area. And then the on line 20, you'll notice that there's an appropriation for the consolidated levy buy-down. And even though we talked about $110 million, $109 million in property tax reductions, we are spending here $90 million. The difference is basically made up because of when payments are made and because we have a 90-10 payment schedule. That, if you flip over to the second page, you'll notice that there are a number of, at the very top line, 48, we reinstated the charter school startup aid. And then if you go down to the bottom of the page, you'll notice under special programs, that's where the first appropriation is made in the 2007, FY 2007. And there we are spending $123 million in picking up costs to the special education regular program. And consequently, that will track over to 2008 and 9, as well as 10 and 11. We also took a number of proposals that the governor and the department recommended and tried to streamline some of the special education laws and payments by rolling in the transition program and rolling in the Part C special education. And so when you put all of these together, you have a much more streamlined special education package. The total appropriations in that area are found on page 3, lines 110, 11, and 12. And there you can see those appropriations for both FY 7 and 8, 9, and 10, and 11. There were some increases, as you can see, in programs like school lunch and technology, libraries, and a number of early initiatives, interventions for identification and remediation for children with disabilities. Members, I'd like to point out the second sheet, which is listed and numbered 2, and just point out a couple of things that are going on. And this is called the levy tracking sheet. This is where you'll find the property tax reductions, but you will also find a reform and in that area. What we did is we took the three levies, the transition levy, the equity levy, and the operating capital levy. And those, as you can, if you look on the levy tracking sheet or the number two, the two handout, you'll see those on lines 7, 8, and 9. If you go over to the sixth column, which says Senate or difference Senate over current law, then you'll see the levy dollar amounts there, $24 million for transition, $74 million for operating, and equity, and $120-some for operating. Those levies are going to be all put together, and the total of those levies come to about $219 million. And then if you move over, you'll notice those levies actually are reduced. As you go down, you'll see that the $90 million that we basically spent on the appropriations spreadsheet reduced that by roughly the $110 million in property tax reductions. If members move over to the last page, you will notice under that same column difference between Senate and current law. And on line 160, you'll see that there is that $109+ million in property tax reductions. So you have on line 173, you'll see, or actually 175, you'll see the percent. If we would do nothing, if we would actually just go home and not do anything, you would see about 11.8% increase in education levies. And then if you go over to the Senate, the difference between the Senate and current law, that would be reduced to 5.7%, which is a significant reduction in property taxes across the state. The handouts that you have, the third one, number three, reflects those changes. And across, when you look at the front of the page, over on the left-hand side, you'll see the school districts, and then each of the levies that I mentioned that are going to be zeroed out or removed. The amount of those levies, which is on the top line, $219 million. And then you'll notice on the next, on the right-hand side, all of those levies are zeroed out, and there's a new levy, a consolidated levy, which is roughly $119 million. And then that levy is applied across the districts. And so you can see the grand total, which is the third column from the right, and the reductions for each of the school districts. There's a handout number four, and this shows and demonstrates the percent increase or the percent change in the special education across the state and across each of the school districts. And then the handout, which is number five and number six, reflect the total revenues or the total revenue changes for each of the districts. And you can look through those. Madam President and members, I think I would point out that many of the changes that I just talked about occur in Article 1 and Article 2 of the language. And I don't know how much in depth you'd like to have me get into, but I would point out that in Article 1 we have a couple of things going on. One is that we have we take the levies and remove them, and a lot of the language in Article 1 reflects that. We also, in Article 1, take the existing alternative teacher compensation or the QCOMP program and remove it from the general education article and put it in the Education Excellence article, which is number or article number two. Those are some of the main changes. We do have an extension in Article 1 of the Safe Schools Levy to the intermediate districts, and heard good testimony about why they needed that extension, or why they needed that additional aid for their schools. The Article 2, which is the Education Excellence article, you'll notice that there the language for the alternative compensation program has been placed. You also will note that there's a number of changes to existing programs, the addition of the International Baccalaureate program. There's a number of initiatives relating to encouraging our existing teachers to become certified so that they can teach college in the high school and concurrent enrollment. There are also, that ties back to a small, relatively small appropriation that's in the form of a grant, so that we can help those teachers become certified and consequently teach in the high school. There's in Article 14, as Senator Hand mentioned, Section 14, Article 2, is the limitation on the number of charter schools to 150. Currently, there's approximately 133. And there's a change to the existing career and technical program. There was some additional levy and also an increase in the floor for districts from $10,000 to $15,000. And then there was a number of initiatives that tie very closely to the reforms in special education finance. And those initiatives relate back to funding of programs like early assessments, trying to identify our students at a much earlier age so that interventions can occur and make a difference in their lives before they actually get into the special education programs. And Senator Wieger, Senator Salzman, Senator Rummel were key people in that area. And I think that the discussions that we had reflect that that's the most tried and true method of trying to reduce long-term expenditures in that area. And that brings us to Article 3, which relate to the some of the special education changes. One of the big changes was to address the funding or the costs, program costs, on a current year basis versus the second fiscal year preceding the current one. So that was a proposal that the governor and the department brought in. A number of other provisions that members had were also added, and then I would point out in Article 3, which is the special programs article, that And this was a proposal that was brought to the committee. I believe Senator Rummel proposed it. And that was to reinstate the growth factor for special education growth. There's two actual inflation factors that we deal with, one with special education regular costs and the other with special education excess costs. And so the you'll see that in our Section 10, we address the regular growth factors of 4.6%, and this, in the next section, you'll see that the special education excess costs are at 2%. With those, actually in Section 14 is the excess costs. With those factors reinstated, we will then be current or very close to it in terms of covering our responsibility for the costs that school districts are bearing out. And then, for the most part, those are the main issues. Many of the other, there's a study in here of education finance study. We made some additional changes to our nutrition program and our telecommunications area, but they were very modest. So, Madam President and members, I would stand for any questions or any discussion that members might have.
Members, please hold down the conversation in the chamber. Thank you. Any further discussions? Senator Lynch.
Yes, Madam President. I have would like to offer the A-16 amendment.
The Secretary will report the A-16 amendment.
Senator Lynch moves to amend Senate File 2095 as follows. Page 43, after line 16, insert. This is the A-16 amendment.
Senator Lynch.
Thank you, Madam President. This amendment serves to update existing statute as related to waivers that are currently being sought from the federal government with regard to No Child Left Behind. And very simply, the provisions in this amendment are the result of the January 2007 report to the legislature from the department regarding their status and implementation of No Child Left Behind. There have been a number of stakeholders involved in these discussions. There have been work groups initiated by the department, and this amendment is just updating the statute and provides continued oversight by this body with regard to those federal waivers.
Is there any further discussions on the A-16 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say nay. The motion prevails. Senator Erickson Ropes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have another amendment. This is SS2095A20.
The Secretary will report the amendment.
Senator Erickson Ropes moves to amend Senate File 2095 as follows. Page 44, after line 24, insert Section 29. This is Amendment A20.
Senator Erickson Ropes.
Thank you, Madam President. I have a lot of charter schools in my district, and I have a very great relationship with them. And we want to continue to support our non-traditional public schools and charter schools. I would request that we approve this amendment. It requests that the legislative auditor evaluate charter schools. And I have talked to Senator Stumpf and Senator Wieger about this amendment, and they both support the amendment. Basically, when the charter schools were set up, the statute before you is what you see in law related to charter schools, and we would simply ask that the legislative auditor evaluate charter schools. One of my understandings is that they were waived some restrictions and some rules as a way to be a laboratory to study and improve our educational practices, and I'd like to know what some of those best practices are. Even my charter schools know that there are charter schools across the state that some, not many, but that are struggling with some financial management that's been in the paper. So I think it's a good time to take a pause and evaluate charter schools district-wide or statewide. The charter schools in my area are quite different from the charter schools in Senator Torres-Ray's district, and we think it's a good opportunity for the state auditor to take a look at charter schools before they continue growing, and we know what we're doing, we know what our best practices are, and we know the areas where they're succeeding. So I would offer this amendment.
Any further discussions on the 820 amendment? Senator Rest.
Thank you, Madam President and members. I know that I am joined by the members of the Legislative Audit Commission in asking the body to reject this amendment. We do have a process. We're in the middle of it right now for topic selection for program evaluations. Every single member of the body, in this body and in the House, had the opportunity to suggest topics to the Legislative Audit Commission Topic Selection Subcommittee. We also, which I happen to chair, we also sent around a ballot, if you will, a survey where not only could members indicate their preferences of the topics that were preliminarily decided on by the Topic Selection Subcommittee from some 50 topics that were suggested by members, but we're now waiting. You could also not only select those, but you could also write in a topic. And I would suggest that if Senator Erickson Ropes thinks that this rises to that level, that she visit with the Legislative Audit Commission. And I would respectfully ask, we don't do that in legislation, and I would respectfully ask that you withdraw the amendment.
Senator Erickson Ropes.
Thank you, Madam President, and Senator Rest, thank you very much. I wonder, Senator Rest, if it would be appropriate if I would just change that to state auditor.
Senator Rest.
Madam President, no, this is the state auditor doesn't audit, doesn't do program evaluations for one thing. That's only in the purview of the legislative auditor. This topic would be an extremely appropriate one, but we're already in that that process. We've notified everybody, and this is just not the place to put this. And again, I would ask you withdraw the amendment.
Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, I think today is the deadline for submitting those ballots for the topic selection. Senator Betzold has one over there. I don't know how many of you have turned them in, but we do have a process on choosing programs for evaluation. And I know I've chaired the topic selection committee in the past. Senator Rest is doing it this year. And we did originally go through and choose several topics to put on the ballot, but it doesn't exclude members from choosing charter schools. And I know Senator Stumpf did submit a letter asking for a review of charter schools. It came in after the original deadline for topic ideas, but it did end up on the list, but it didn't get too much attention because it came in right the day before we had our meeting, and our meeting was at 8:30 in the morning. And so it is possible for members who would like to choose charter schools or recommend charter schools to the Topic Selections Committee to still do that, and I would encourage you to do that. If you have not filled out your ballot, you can certainly get a hold of one and submit it right in charter schools. Choose the other ones, four or five different topics that you would like to see us evaluate this year. And I think I can find a ballot for you if you don't know where yours is. But we certainly can still take those suggestions.
Any further discussions on the 820 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Those opposing say nay.
No.
The motion does not prevail. A division has been asked for. All those in favor, please stand.
Please stand still. Please stand still. You may sit. Those opposing, please stand. There being 24 ayes and 33 nays, the motion does not prevail. Any further discussions? Senator Wergen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have the A07 amendment, and I have a handout if there's a page available, please.
The Secretary will report the A07 amendment.
Madam Chair, the A07 amendments.
Senator Wergen, we need to report the amendment. Hold on a second.
We don't have it.
Senator Wergen, can you hold on for a second? We don't have the amendment to report. Any other discussions? Senator Wergen, we have to have an engrossing look at it. Can you wait?
Madam Chair, I can temporarily withdraw my amendment.
If you could do that. Thank you, Senator Wergen. Senator Wergen temporarily withdraws the A07 amendment. Any further discussions? Senator Hand.
Thank you, Madam President. I'd like to offer the A19 amendment.
The Secretary will report the amendment.
Senator Hand moves to amend Senate File 2095 as follows. Page 34, delete Section 14. Page 44, this is Amendment A19.
Senator Hand.
Thank you, Madam President. Members, this is an amendment that we offered in committee that has to do with the charter school startup aid and the cap. And as Senator Stumpf indicated in his opening comments and the amendment that he offered, that part of the intent of this amendment has been addressed by Senator Stumpf's amendment. The portion of this amendment that restores the school startup aid for charter schools has already been done. So that language is in my amendment. But in addition to that, I also have language that deletes Section 14 and on lines page 44 and 45, line 31, page 1, that is the language that deals with the aid that is lost as a result of imposing a cap of 150 charter schools. And just so we're clear, the cap of 150 charter schools includes the 133 that are currently in operation, and there are about 17 additional that are sort of in the pipeline, I guess, and those would be allowed to go forward, but after that there would be none. And members, this is not a good precedent for us to be putting into law at this point. And I'd like to remind the members of this body, we did not have hearings on charter schools in either the Education Policy Committee or the Finance Committee. None of the provisions that this language is taking out were debated. There were no bills brought to do this. There were no bills brought to question the how effective charter schools were operating, whether we ought to study them. And as was pointed out just a few minutes ago, there was no request to the state or the Legislative Auditor Commission to do a study. This has not been an issue before the Senate Education Committees until we saw the finance bill in its final form. And the argument is that this is going to save us some money, that we need to find some money that we can spend and put into the provisions that deal with special education. And let's be clear on how much money this is. After the amendment that Senator Stumpf offered, we're talking about $4 million. $4 million out of about a $13.5 billion budget. that we need to find in order to make this budget work, make this bill work. I don't think that that is really what the intent is here. I think we need to ask ourselves, are charter schools worth continuing to invest in? And if so, why would we want to put a cap on their continued growth? Now, I know there are questions, and there are charter schools that have been less successful than others, but frankly, there have been traditional public school districts that have been less successful than others. The fact is that charter schools are very popular. That is a very strong growth element in public education. There is a huge demand, if you want to use that adjective. Maybe huge is too much, but there is demand for charter schools. Charter schools are started when parents want a new school, and they go to the effort of creating that new school. And what we're saying is we don't want that to go forward. We don't want parents and their families and others to begin to work on new schools. Just to give you one example, we had a hearing in the budget committee, budget division, on a school that former Education Commissioner Bob Wadle was proposing, a charter school that would be devoted toward, its curriculum would be based on some of the early literacy studies that have been done. And I know Senator Salzman has been involved in that, as long as with some others. And he has a proposal for a charter school that would use that research, use that knowledge, and address a particular segment of our learning population that would benefit from that kind of curriculum. Under this cap, his school would not be permitted to start because it's not in the pipeline. We're saying to Mr. Wadle, that's a great idea. We love the idea of using this research for curriculum and getting kids to read, and you're going to start a new school, and you've got people that want to start there, but we've just decided we're not going to let you do it, even though we've had no hearings about the value of charter schools. There's been no challenges brought to say charter schools as a whole ought to be diminished. We've had other bills in this committee. I remember, I believe it was Elk River, that is looking at substantial increases in enrollment. And their enrollment is growing at such a pace that we've looked at some extraordinary measures to try to bring additional funding to the Elk River School District. And I think that's a legitimate policy position to take. And so we had hearings on that. We debated that. But now we're looking at another segment of schooling that is growing, and we're saying, well, our response to that is to close it down. That just doesn't make any sense to me. And so, members, I would urge your support for this amendment, A-19 amendment. This would restore the status quo before the introduction of the finance bill. It would simply allow the charter schools to go forward as they have been. Doesn't preclude any further scrutiny. I believe there ought to be scrutiny of charter schools, all schools. We welcome that. We should have hearings before we take this kind of a drastic step. So this would eliminate the cap that's currently in the bill before us. And so I would urge your support.
Any further discussions on the A-19 amendment? Senator Stumpf.
Madam President and members, if I understand the amendment correctly, what this does is it cuts funding to special education by about $5 million and then moves it over to the charter schools. I don't think there's no one that's saying that we shouldn't take a look at the charter schools. I think what our responsibility is this year is to pay for our bills first before we end up doing something entirely something else. And that's the approach we used when we borrowed money from all of our school districts in 2003, and that's what we're trying to do this year. Let's pay our bills, and then if we're going to create new programs and new spending, we'll have to find the revenues to do that. I would strongly urge members to not cut our special education programs at the expense of what might happen in the charter school area.
And Senator Betzel.
Madam President, I'd like to impose a call to the Senate for the balance of proceedings of Senate File 2095.
The Senate is under call.
Madam President.
Senator Betzel.
I move that further proceedings of roll call be dispensed with and Sergeant Arms be instructed to bring the absent members.
On the motion, all those in favor say aye. All those opposed? Motion prevails. Senator Hand.
Madam President, are we still debating my amendment?
Yes, we're still on your amendment, Senator Hand.
And can I respond to, what Senator Stumpf was just commenting about the purpose of my amendment was to defund or take money away from special education, and that is not what this does. It does try to preserve the balance of the bill. I'm trying to do this in a way that is responsible. What we're talking about is about $4 million. $4 million out of a $13.8 billion bill. And what we did is we said, let's just take that $4 million and reduce the aid to the special education portion of this by $4 million spread across all the students in the state. So it does have, I guess, some effect in terms of the bill on what this would do for special education, but not a significant effect, not an effect that would say that we are intending or going to do substantial harm to the main purpose of this bill, which is to fund special education. But what we are doing is we're taking a currently existing program and we're saying we're going to close it down. We're going to close down an existing program with no hearings, no debate, no evidence brought forward as to rationale of why we should do that. And so I think, members, that what all we're trying to do here is to restore the status quo. Let's not change the status quo with charter schools until and unless we've had a hearing and established the case that we ought to do something differently. It doesn't make any sense to insert at the last minute into a finance bill a policy position that has never been debated, that has never been brought forward to a committee and asked to be scrutinized. And to make the argument that it's for money when it's such a fraction, a tiny fraction of the total cost of the bill, just that to me defies common sense. I think that there are ways, and we tried to offer one way here to say, well, let's take that $4 million and kind of divvy it up among the accounting that we're going to do for special education. There may be another way to do this. I'm happy to have this go forward and have the details worked out. Senator Stumpf said that, and there were some money that was used to pay for the startup aid. Maybe some of that money could also be used to restore the cost to the programs that we're cutting in the charter schools. But let's not do this. Let's not send a negative message to the people of the state of Minnesota that we do not favor innovation, that we do not believe the charter schools have been a good thing. So again, members, I would urge you to support my amendment, the A-19 amendment.
Any further discussions on the A-19 amendment? Senator Day.
Madam President, first off, Senator Stump, I think you're a great education committee chairman. I've enjoyed, and I usually don't get involved in education. I'm not on the education committee, and I haven't been, but it was something interesting that happened the other night, and I just caught it, and it kind of fits into what's today. On Almanac, on Friday night, they had a lady that was on the Minneapolis School Board, and then they had an individual that was head of a charter school. And it was interesting to me because, as you well know, in the Minneapolis school system, they're losing like 1.5% each year. They're slowly going down to the point where kids are either taking open enrollment or private schools or whatever. But it was interesting because the other individual said that what their school is it caters to African Americans in Minneapolis, that charter school. And their enrollment is going up. And it was kind of an interesting dialogue between the two, how this guy with the charter school is going up and he's educating a population in the Minneapolis school system, and then the Minneapolis school system, they're going down.
Senator Day, are you going to come back to the A-19 amendment at some point?
What's the amendment about?
Senator Day,
about charter schools. I'm talking about charter schools.
Go ahead, Senator Day. There's no problem. I just want to make sure that we do come back to the A-19 amendment.
Well, I might be able to enlighten you a little bit about Minneapolis schools also. Who knows? I did on ramp meters. I mean, I got an opinion, even though I might be a little ways away. But so it was to me, when I listened to that discussion, it made some sense that the people that are running these different charter schools, and I haven't visited these, but I think I should, it sounded like that's a very successful program. Now, if you have a $15 billion budget that's 2 years, and we're talking about $4 million, and yet people are saying we need to help kids, and then I always hear we need to help more disadvantaged type kids, and here's the program that does it, and I'm just thinking, wow, this seems like a wonderful buy for $4 million. So that's my comment, and sticking to it.
Senator Stumpf.
Thank you, Madam President. I just want to try to clear up what seems to be a little bit of a misconception. Under the proposal, the bill that we have before you, it does not restrict any existing charter school or any charter school that would be under the cap of 150. Those school districts, those charters can grow, and they'll be funded, and there will be no change in that area. And I think the illusion was is that we're stopping, you know, not only those above the 150, but everything below it. But that's not true.
Any further discussions on the A19 amendment?
Madam Chair.
Senator Day on that point. Senator
Madam
Day.
Chair. Senator Stumpf, why would anybody put a number on charter schools when we know they're so successful? Why would anybody sit around in a room and say, let's put a cap on charter schools because their enrollment is increasing and they're doing this fantastic job for students? I don't know. I guess I better get on the committee because I'm missing something that is quite important to Minnesotans. And I would think, especially in the metropolitan area, people better be taking a look at it because, from what I can gather, they're very, very successful. And we're saying we're going to cap it. You're too successful. Who cares if we have 1,000 of them?
Senator Scoy.
Thank you, Madam President, and Senator Day and members. Success in education is more than just attracting students into your building. Success in education is preparing your children for a lifetime of learning and to be able to go on and succeed in higher education. I think Senator Stumpf is right here. It's time to not affect the current charter schools, not affect the ones that are currently online, but let's take a look and see how they're doing at preparing kids for life. And we need to give this just a little bit of time to see how they're doing, and then we'll move forward if it's a worthwhile proposal.
Madam President.
Senator Hand.
Thank you, Madam President. And to Senator Stumpf's point and somewhat Senator Scoy, we appreciate the fact that the law as it was originally introduced several days ago has been changed, that the startup money that the state provides is going to be provided to those 15, 16, 17 charter schools that have been in the preliminary stages, have been approved, and we appreciate that, and that's a great help, and we're thankful for that. The point is, though, that putting a cap on new charter schools does a couple of things. First thing it does, as I said, for schools like the ones that Bob Weddle is working on, he's not going to be able to recruit a board. He's not going to be able to recruit the other funding that's needed to get this going. He's not going to be able to start this program. He's not going to be able to proceed at all because he's not in that group of 15 or 16 schools that have already been in the pipeline. So the innovation that he's talking about is not going to happen. That's number one. Number two, we do get federal money for charter schools, about $15 million a year. I believe most of that goes to support the Department of Education and fund, I think, 4 or 5 FTEs whose sole purpose is to oversee the charter schools in this state. And we would lose that money. Once we put a cap on it, we're sending the signal to the federal government that we're out of the charter school business. And my understanding is that when we do that, that money would not come to Minnesota. So then we'd be in a position of having the Department of Education trying to do an oversight job for which there is no funding, unless we find funding from some other place in the budget. The other thing that I think the most important thing that this does is it sends a huge message to people that says we are not willing to allow people who want to start new schools to start new schools. If anybody thinks starting a charter school is an easy thing, believe me, it isn't. I've had the opportunity last year to be involved on a board with a school that's starting up in South Minneapolis. This is a lot of work. This is not. There are lots of reports. The application we had to submit was about 3 pages thick. It takes a lot of work by a lot of people, and the only way charter schools succeed is when they have students and families who commit to attend. That's the only way they succeed. If there is no demand, there will be no charter schools. And so to say that we're going to artificially just cap it out and say, well, the ones that are in place today and the few that are in process, we'll let those go forward. We're just not going to let anybody else think about starting a new school when there is clearly demand, I think is just unwise. We want to educate everybody. We want to make sure every child has got the best education opportunities in this state. And charter schools have proven to be, over the last 15 years, a very viable, attractive alternative to thousands of families in this state. And I think that we're doing a huge disservice to those people that have committed their time and effort into this movement by saying we're going to close it down. Other states that have done this, there have been other states that have capped out the growth of charter schools. It has, in effect, killed their charter school movement. Because once they're in place, they are very difficult to take off. And part of the reason for that is that there's huge resistance from the traditional public school establishment to charter schools in the first place. And we know that. Talk to former Senator Amber Reichscott Young, who was one of the, if not the, most important legislator that brought charter schools into existence in Minnesota 15 years ago. Huge battle to get this idea accepted. Once it's in place and we now say, well, we're not going to have it anymore, we're going to have to fight that battle all over again. Members, this is an important policy issue. It should not be put into a budget bill at the last minute with no hearing, no testimony, no evidence. And while I'm perfectly willing to concede that there have been charter schools that haven't been perfect and have been troubled, and some of them have been closed, and I would say that's evidence that the system works if you can close a school. There are lots of other schools in the traditional public sector that don't work very well and have trouble. Our response to that isn't to close the whole system down. We say, let's work on that. And I would say if there are concerns about charter schools, let's work on it. But taking this step, I think, is dramatic, has long-term impact, and it sends a terrible signal about our commitment to education in this state. So I would urge, again, support the A-19 amendment.
Any further discussions on the A-19 amendment? Senator St. John.
Madam President, member, I want to stand in support of Senator Hand's amendment and identify myself to some degree with the Senator Day's comments as well. And I don't serve on K-12 either. I haven't been terribly involved in those committees as we've as least I've been here. But what I have seen, Madam Chair, in my own community is a Somali school. I went there last fall, and I went there with some skepticism about whether or not this was a good thing or not, and whether or not, you know, they were teaching, if you will, the Somali culture, whether or not they were really acclimating these young kids towards America and teaching them the kind of things that they need to know in terms of being successful. And I tell you what, I was absolutely amazed. And the very notion that we would move through this particular legislative session and this particular legislative bill and cut off anything like this to anybody on into the future that might want to consider these kind of entities is not right. I mean, we need to be promoting opportunities and education for all of our kids, and whether it's public education, whether it's this charter school method, I don't care what it is, but it always boils down to what's best for kids. And I think what's best for kids are opportunities. And whether that opportunity, as I said, is in a public school, in a charter school, in any other kind of school, that's what we have to be concerned about. And the very notion that, if you will, we're pulling the plug on charter schools here today is repulsive, at least to me, and I think bad public policy for the state of Minnesota.
Any further discussions? Seeing none, all those in favor, Senator Betzel has asked for a roll call. The Secretary will take the roll. All senators who want to vote, having voted, the secretary will close the roll. There being 29 ayes and 35 nays, the motion does not prevail. Senator Wergen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I apologize for that earlier confusion. I gave you the wrong number for the amendment. I am looking at the A22 amendment. And members, there was a handout passed out earlier with my name on it, and it says A07. It's actually the A22. That's the handout you want to look at, and it says Star News on the top.
The secretary will report the A22 amendment.
Senator Wergen moves to amend Senate File 2095 as follows. Page 83 after line 8, insert, this is the A22 amendment.
Senator Wergen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, Senator Stumpf had an incredibly delicate balancing act to do in this bill, and I recognize that and appreciate that very much. K-12 funding is not an easy topic because no matter what you do, you could say that you create winners and losers. And I know that Senator Stumpf was trying to have a very positive effect on property taxes, so he was very cautious about some of the things that he did. But I want to point out what the A-22 amendment is about, and I'm really hoping that I have this body's support. This amendment is under the lease levy authority for school districts, and it is strictly for the District of Elk River, which several members of this body do happen to represent. Now, everyone in committee and probably here on the floor would tell you that slight growth in a school district is a good thing, and it certainly is. Slight growth in a school district is a wonderful thing. Declining enrollment is painful. But the Elk River School District, and members, I want you to please listen to these statistics and look at the sheet of paper that I handed out. The Elk River School District is growing by more than 540 students per year. So when you have growth, it's a good thing, but when your growth is exploding, it creates tremendous problems. 540 students per year is more than the total number of students in over 130 districts across the state. As a matter of fact, in that very next sentence, you can see that that district grew by 2,100 students over the last 4 years. And there are 261 out of the 304 school districts that have less total enrollment than the growth in this district. And so they need some flexibility. It should also be noted that Elk River is on the fringe of the metropolitan area. And because they don't have, they have, they're kind of the average school district, you know. They have a diverse population, but not too diverse. They have special ed, but not an overwhelming amount of special ed. In other words, the Elk River School District falls through every conceivable crack in the funding formula that there is. And so compared to like districts, Elk River School District receives $12 million less than the state average in funding. That's an enormous amount of money to have to deal with. So what the A22 amendment does is gives the Elk River District a little bit of flexibility in their lease levy authority. It moves the cap of the lease levy authority from $100 to $136. This is absolutely no cost to the state. It also gives them flexibility in what that lease levy can be used for so that they can get some kindergarten and first grade and second grade elementary level classrooms up and running very quickly. And it is not because the voters are continuously saying no. It's because this explosive growth has created the necessity to fast track just a few things to make them work in this district. And so, members, I would ask you to please support the Elk River School District by voting yes for this amendment. Thank you.
Any discussions on the A22 amendment? Senator Stumpf.
Thank you, Madam President and members. Maybe I can try to expand on this a little bit. And I've talked to Senator Wergen, and I've talked to representatives of the Elk River School District. And they are a fast-growing district. But under the current law, districts are allowed to levy up to $100 per pupil for facilities, for leasing facilities. And it's my understanding, and I don't have exact information because it's been very difficult to get. But it's my understanding that Elk River is not levying up to their $100 per pupil amount. They're somewhere between maybe $60 and some say $80 per pupil. This program allows the district to levy without any voter approval, and so it's a property tax increase is what it is. So it is a predicament. What the amendment that you have before you allows the school board, the Elk River School Board, to levy $500,000 in property taxes without any voter involvement in the issue. When I visited with the Elk River School representatives, I asked them, well, why don't you run a referendum, actually get approval for the increase in property taxes? And they said, well, we have plans to. They think that they would like to, they can't quite address that need. I guess I'm kind of caught in between. I don't think that the increase in property taxes should go just undetected. Obviously, for myself chairing the division, I know next year what this will do. This sets a floor so that every district across the state will come and ask for an increase in their lease levy, and I obviously will have very poor grounds to say, I'm sorry, your district can't have it when Elk River got it. The program was really meant to be kind of a help, and so whether it's $136 or whether it's $150, I think that that at some point we have to realize that every time we raise it, we raise property taxes, and the bill that we have before you tries to make a serious attempt at reducing property taxes across the state. So it's my estimation that there are other opportunities. I believe that the district currently can raise about half or a quarter of $1 million, or half of the amount that this amendment does, without doing anything. In other words, they have that authority currently, and until demonstrated that they actually need that extra quarter of $1 million, I'm going to have to say no to the amendment.
Any further discussions on the A22 amendment? Senator Wergen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Stump, just a little side note here. I actually couldn't agree with you more. I got to tell you that this was a tough amendment to author. I mean, I don't like the property tax increases. I like the fact that you've done things to make them go down. And if it weren't for the extraneous circumstances for this school district, let me tell you, I would not be standing at this microphone advocating for what I'm doing. I'll probably get some real criticism in my local newspaper and some things like that. So, Senator Stump, I stand to answer for this, but I really do believe it's the right thing for the Elk River District. Thank you for understanding.
Any further discussions on the A22 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of the motion say aye. Those opposing say nay. The motion does not prevail. Senator Coring.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I have the A51 amendment.
The Secretary will report the amendment.
Senator Coring moves to amend Senate File 2095 as follows. Page 77, after line 6, insert. This is the A51 amendment.
Senator Coring.
Madam President, members, this amendment modifies the debt service equalization aid program to provide more state aid to school districts and to increase the number of
number of districts that would be eligible for it. For some districts without much of a tax base, this aid is essential for them being able to build a building or repair school facilities without forcing an overly heavy property tax burden on its residents. So if you look at the amendment, Section 1, debt service equalization, increases the likelihood of the district being eligible for debt service equalization aid by lowering the debt service equalization tiers from 15% and 25% of adjusted net tax capacity to 12 and 22%. And Section 2, equalization debt service levy, increases the first tier equalization factor for the debt service equalization aid program from $3,200 to $5,500 per pupil unit, and annually adjusts the equalization factor to keep pace with the statewide growth in the tax base. This would result in more aid and less levy for qualifying districts. In Section 3 of the amendment, the net capacity equalization factor adjustment indexes the debt service equalization aid program, equalizing the factor to annual growth by the rate of growth in the statewide next net tax capacity per pupil unit. So really what this is, members, is I've got several small school districts. I'll give you an example of one specifically. They built a new school about 4 years ago. They went to their voters, asked them to step up to the plate, and asked them to vote for a levy. They told their voters that they would receive 58% support from the state. And so then what happened over the last 4 years is as the property taxes went up in this small smart farming community, then the aid from the state went down. And so right now, this school district is receiving 27% from the state rather than 58%. And the community is at odds with each other because they feel like the school board has lied to them and the school board has not lied to them. What has happened is the taxpayers are paying a lot more on their property taxes, and they're really concerned about this. So I guess I'd like to hear from the chairman, see what he has to say about this. He understands this issue very clearly. So,
Senator Stumpf.
Madam President and Senator Coring and members, Senator Coring has identified a real problem that we've been wrestling with for a long time. The inflation factors have not been adjusted for years, and obviously I think if we had the resources, this would be one area where we'd seriously look at, because the information that Senator Coring mentioned is exactly right. The problem that we're faced is that the price tag on this is primarily on, well, it is on the aid side. So we are reducing the levies in those districts, and then consequently the state picks up the aid. The aid cost is somewhere around, and I don't have the exact dollar amount, but somewhere around $16 million for the changes on lines, basically in that changes on lines 1.25 and 1.26. So I wish we had the resources to do it, but we don't. We're tackling a problem of trying to pay a bill that a different bill, so to speak, and try to get that taken care of. And obviously, I would say that I'm looking forward to when we can actually do something on this as well. So I guess that summed up in saying I can't support your amendment. Because I don't know where we'd come up with the $16 million.
Any further discussions on the A51 amendment? Seeing none. All those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay.
No.
The motion does not prevail. Any further discussions? Senator Fischbach.
I have too many papers. Madam Chair, I have the A-52 amendment.
The Secretary will report the amendment.
I don't know how many.
Senator Fischbach moves to amend Senate File 2095 as follows, page 88, after line 32, insert. This is the A-52 amendment.
Senator Fischbach.
Madam Chair, basically this is an amendment to add a fund transfer for the Holding Ford School District. There are already several fund transfers in the bill that we're looking at, and this school district is in SOD, and this would go a long way to help them. It's $150,000 we're asking to transfer.
Any discussions on the A-52 amendment? Senator Stumpf.
Madam President and members, we do have a number of fund transfers in the bill, and I'm not sure why we did not address this one. I think we had two different periods where we tried to look at all of the fund transfers, so this may have come in later or something, but it has a modest cost to it of $150,000, and generally, we would have tried to pick up most of those. So I would support it.
Any further discussions on the A-52 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, say nay. The motion does prevail. Any further discussions on the bill? Senator Wergen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have the A-15 amendment.
The Secretary will report the A-15 amendment.
Senator Wergen now moves to amend Senate File 2095 as follows, page 80. This is the A-15 amendment.
Senator Wergen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Stumpf talked about some concern with raising a levy without voter approval that was unlike other districts' ability to do. And he talked about setting a precedent, and he's right in the fact that it would set a precedent in the lease levy authority to change the amount that could be levied for and the purposes of the levy. But members, there are those exceptions in law where money can be bonded and levied without voter approval, and this amendment points that out very vividly. What this amendment does is delete from the bill the sections that give the St. Paul School District the authority to bond for $15 million every biennium without any voter approval, something no other district can do except St. Paul. If we don't want exceptions, then why does St. Paul have the ability to bond? And members, I said $15 million per biennium. Not a small amount, not $500,000, $15 million on an ongoing basis. Is it okay for St. Paul to be able to do that and yet for the rest of the state to have no authority whatsoever to go just a little bit above and beyond in extraneous circumstances? Madam Chair, I don't expect you to vote for this one. I see that smile. But if we're going to talk about fairness and we're going to talk about levy authority, let's be fair to everybody. And I don't think St. Paul should be able to do $15 million every biennium if we can't do $500,000 in a district that's really suffering.
Any further discussions on the A-15 amendment? Senator Pappas.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I rise to oppose the Wergen amendment. I think that if any district wants to make the case to the Education Committee that they should have an exception from voter approval, they should go ahead and make that case. St. Paul and Minneapolis have made the case over the years that we've had this authority for a long time. We really want to prevent our urban area, our core educational buildings from going the way of other urban districts like Gary and Detroit and the District of Columbia, et cetera. Our buildings are landlocked. Our sites are roughly a quarter the size of state recommendations. When expanding a site because we don't have enough space, we need to condemn houses, and often that involves multiple families. So it's very difficult for us to do that. Many of these older buildings have severe safety needs. They're not set up for current safety requirements or proper lighting. The handicapped accessibility and environmental safety, old ventilation on science labs, all these things are really serious issue in our buildings. We're not building any new buildings with this. It's only for, we call it HVAC, heating, ventilation, air conditioning, roof repair for our aging buildings. So I would ask you to oppose the amendment and not so that our children can have a clean and safe environment like your children have in your schools.
Any further discussions on the A15 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of the motion say aye. Those opposed say nay. The motion does not prevail. Senator Hand.
Thank you, Madam President. I would like to offer the A9 amendment.
The Secretary will report the A9 amendment.
Senator Hand now moves to amend House File 2095 as follows. Page 85, after line 25, insert. And this is the A-9 amendment.
Senator Hand.
Thank you, Madam President. And members, the A9 amendment is a restoration of language that was in the bill that left Senator Stumpf's committee. It's also in the bill when it left Senator Cohen's committee. I'm not quite sure why it was taken out in tax committee, since this particular language has nothing to do with money. There's no money that it spends. There's no money that it appropriates. There's no money involved in it at all. It's a policy provision. And what this is language that has to do with the structural balance reporting law that we currently have in the state. And this is a bill, this is a law that was passed, I think, about 7 or 8 years ago that puts a requirement on school districts to report to the public periodically to make sure, so the public knows that when they're settling contracts or making long-term commitments for money, that those monies are there, that they are not putting the district into an unbalanced financial situation. Now, the language that was pulled out of the bill in Senator Bach's committee simply tries to tighten up that language and make it a little stronger. There currently are no penalties in law for districts that do not abide by the law. In fact, the handout that you're getting that I'm asking to be sent around shows a couple of the reports that are currently being made in compliance with the current structural balance reporting law. And as you can see, they're very incomplete. One of the reports shows a district that is showing a settlement and a fund balance and actually showing that they're spending more money than what they have. And that over the period of the time that this report is covered, it shows that they're actually sending their fund balances into debt, into the negative. But they're also saying they're in structural balance. Well, that just doesn't right. And the other report that you have, the longer one, shows a report that has no information on it at all. And these things technically comply with the current structural balance reporting law. Obviously, they are very little value. So what the language that was in the bill originally simply is trying to tighten up the language. It's requiring that districts provide information in a specified format on the Internet and to the Department of Education. It would also require that the commissioner not accept any reports that don't comply. That's a, I guess, a penalty, a little bit stronger penalty than what we currently have. Not much of a penalty, but some penalty. But it simply says, do the report the way it was intended, and the commissioner can't accept a report that doesn't comply with the intent of the reporting. Now, members, this is a good bill to have. We all talk about accountability. We all talk about local control. We all talk about we want to have fiscally responsible education. All this does, the intent of the requirement originally was to say when school districts are making decisions about how they're spending their money and when they sign contracts, those are long-term commitments, the law says just make sure that you can pay for that without having to go into your reserves to do it. That you have the projections, the enrollment, the financial resources to live up to the commitments that you're making. That's what the structural balance law is intended to do. The language that was in the bill originally was good language. It was an improvement. It strengthened the bill or the current law somewhat, maybe not as much as I would like to have seen, but it strengthened it somewhat. And somewhere along the way, it got pulled out. And, Madam President, I don't know why it got pulled out. Maybe someone who's on the tax committee can explain to me how in a tax committee an education provision that was passed by the Education Budget Division, got pulled out in Tax Committee when there's nothing about taxes in this particular bill. So, members, this is an important provision. It's good for our public. It's good for our school district. And, Madam President, could I request a roll call vote on this?
A roll call? I don't need three hands, I guess. Roll call will be imposed.
Thank you. So, members, I urge your support for the A9 amendment.
Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Madam President and members. This provision that Senator Hand is trying to put back into the bill is trying to ask school districts to precisely predict their revenue for the next 3 years. The provision that was in law had this requirement for 2 years. It really is almost impossible for school districts to comply with that, but it is it's another report that the school districts has to do. It's extra work that really was not providing any positive information and result. You know, they were duplicative and did not provide really accurate information. The proponents of this argue that we need this to hold school districts accountable. But currently, school districts are required to maintain balanced budgets. They currently provide consolidated financial statements that convert uniform financial accounting. They publish their revenues and expenditure budgets. They show current year and actual revenues, expenditures, and fund balances for the prior year and project fund balances for the current year. This information must be published in the newspaper of general circulation or on the district's official website. They conduct annual audits performed by an independent firm. They comply with the state's truth in taxation laws. They comply with the open meeting law. They comply with uniform finance accounting and reporting standards. And they provide their annual audit information for review and comparison by the Minnesota Department of Education. I would hold that this provision is not necessary, that it doesn't work, and it wasn't accomplishing its goal.
Madam President.
Any further discussion? Senator Hand.
Thank you, Madam President. And I guess I would like to disagree with my friend, Senator Skoy. I think this is good provision. I think that this was passed out of the Education Budget Division, where we would have had plenty of opportunity to object to this language. It was not objected to. It was left in the bill. And as the examples that I passed out will show you, the current law doesn't fulfill the expectations that we have. You've got a district, and the exact name of that district, of course, has been blacked out. We don't want to call attention to anybody unnecessarily. But it shows very clearly that they're settling contracts that they cannot afford unless they go into their reserves. Now, Senator Skoy, you did mention that there is a requirement that there be a two-year lookout on their budget. And I understand, coming from a business background, that when you do forecasting, when you do projections, when you do planning for a business, you can't know precisely what is going to happen into the future. But you know what, members? Every bill we pass here has tails. And we make projections going out 2 years in the future from here about what our bills are going to cost the public. We do that every bill we pass. And I know they're not perfect, and we all know that they're not going to be precise, but we do it because we're trying to, in good faith, say what we know today, this is going to be our situation 2 years or 3 years from now. All we're saying is school districts have the ability, as any business would, as this legislature has the opportunity to know what we know and make reasonable, good faith estimates about what the future is going to look like. And all we're saying is that there should be some requirement when they do their contract settlement that they settle contracts that are affordable. That's what the structural balance law requires. Don't put yourself into debt by making bargains that you can't live with. And there are districts that are in statutory operating debt today. I would argue some of those are in debt because they haven't done a good job of looking at their contracts and their long-term financial structure. We know that about a third of the school districts in the state don't file this report at all currently. They're required to in law, they just don't do it. And there's nothing in the law that offers any kind of penalty for a school district that doesn't comply with the law today. So the language that's in the bill originally doesn't impose any great draconian penalty. All it says is the commissioner can't accept a report that doesn't comply. So it would make it much more clear which districts are complying with the law. That's not much of a penalty, but it's something. And so, members, I think that if we can do, if we can take two-year lookouts in the future and make predictions, if businesses can do that for 2, 3, 4, 5 years, then school districts can do the same thing. And so, again, I urge you to support the A9 amendment and ask for a roll call vote.
A roll call has been asked and will be taken. Members, please hold down the conversations in the chamber. Any further discussions on the A9 amendment? Seeing none, the secretary will take the roll. All senators want to vote. Having voted, the secretary will close the roll.
Okay.
Seeing that there are 23 ayes and 40 nays, the motion does not prevail. Any further discussions on Senate File 2095? Senator Wergen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have the A11 amendment, and I have a handout that goes with that amendment for the members, please.
The secretary will report the A11 amendment.
Senator Wergen now moves to amend Senate File 2095 as follows. Page 13, after line 9, insert. This is the A11 amendment.
Senator Wergen.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I kind of wish you had this spreadsheet and a little bit more time to look on it where this amendment is concerned. It is somewhat complicated in nature and yet fairly simple. The A11 amendment significantly changes the E12 education bill.
Members, take your conversations to the retire room, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair, because this is complicated, and I would not want to be accused of tricking people into a vote, so I want them to look at the spreadsheet. Madam Chair, Senator Stumpf has done a lot of work trying to figure out how to fund K-12 education. And it is admirable that he wants to catch special education up with the funding to get them to the statutory 68% reimbursement. However, when you do that in one big fell swoop, in other words, when you take the E-12 budget and you give almost the entire budget to special education, you create huge disparities throughout the state because you're really not sending any money directly to the K-12 classrooms other than special ed. And I know that helping out special ed in a kind of a roundabout way helps out the K-12 classroom, but it doesn't get money directly there. The other thing that you should know, members, is that by funding special ed, we are essentially telling the school districts, here's this significant amount of money, but the only thing you can do with it is to spend it on special ed. And our school districts need more flexibility than that. Some school districts absolutely need to spend it all on special ed. Some do not. So, members, what this bill does... Members, what this amendment does is sort of split the difference. It says Senator Stumpf is right. We've got to do something about special ed. So it leaves half of that money right there where Senator Stumpf put it. But it takes the other half of the money on the special ed line and it distributes it throughout the state on a per student basis. In other words, every student throughout the state of Minnesota would receive $108 per student and then the rest in special ed. And members, I would like you really to look at the A11 amendment sheet that I passed out for you, because I'm here to tell you that if you represent the Minneapolis School District, you do not want to vote for my amendment. That's honesty. But if you represent Aiken, Minnesota, whoever represents Aiken, your school district would gain $111 per student under this amendment. So they would still get special education funding, but they would also get something for the whole school district. If you represent Columbia Heights, by the way, members, this is not a partisan amendment, because if you look at this list, it's all over the board. If you represent Columbia Heights, you do not want to vote for my amendment. I'll be honest. But if you represent St. Clair or Moose Lake, you want to vote for my amendment. If you represent Norwood, the answer is no. If you represent Pequot Lakes, yes, you do. If you represent Quezon, yes, this is a good amendment. If you represent Lanesboro, yes, this is a good amendment. If you represent Goodhue, yes, this is a good amendment. Senator Sparks is shaking his head. No, you don't want to vote for it. I can tell you that. If you represent Rochester, this is a good amendment. What this does, members, is something that we have failed to do in education, and that's to somewhat begin to equalize the funding throughout the state of Minnesota and to stop the current practice of making sure that one district has many thousand dollars more per student than another district. We have enormous disparities. In the total spending from district to district, the amount is almost $10,000 per student per year, from the highest funded district to the lowest funded district. I think that's a tragedy. And it's catching some school districts in some really painful spots. The other thing this does is says, yes, we need to do special ed. But folks, for those of you that have school districts whose boards have very conscientiously taken care of special ed but not gone overboard, they've made sure that the kids that need special ed are in the special ed classroom, but they have not over-identified to get extra money. And believe me, that does happen. Over-identification happens. And so this begins to do a little bit of reform, because it's a straight across the board amount for students, but it also recognizes the differences from district to district. Members, I would urge you to please vote yes on this amendment if this serves you well, and if not, vote no. But I want to add to this too. I happen to serve 13 school districts. And this is a vote that two of my school districts do not do well with, but the other 11 do. But the other thing that this amendment does is that it's right for all of the students across the state of Minnesota. It makes a huge attempt at not playing favorites like we're doing with the education funding formula. And there's huge resistance to reforming that formula, and I get that. So, Madam Chair, members, if you want to do right for all of the kids of Minnesota, please vote yes to this amendment. But if you want to be territorial, look very carefully at this distribution sheet. Thank you.
Any further discussions on the A11 amendment? Senator Stumpf.
Thank you, Madam President and members. I guess I don't know if I should be territorial or not, because if I look at my home district, I should vote for her, for Senator Wergen's amendment. But let me just try to lay some foundation here for what we've been elected to do in terms of the state of Minnesota. If we are totally zeroed in on our own parochial district, then I think we've taken our oath of office in the wrong way. What we've been sworn into office to do is to do what is good for the constituents out there in the state. And in the case of the legislation that you have before you, it is to take care of an unpaid bill that goes back to a number of years ago, a bill that has thrown many of our districts, and in fact most of our districts, into financial disarray. It isn't uniform. Special ed costs are not on a per pupil basis. Special ed costs are whatever that district happens to end up with. It's a cost-driven program. That's why some districts have larger special ed costs than others. Regional centers tend to have more special ed costs. Although I visited with many small districts that one or two very severe high-cost programs have forced them to cut regular faculty or regular teachers and regular programs just to fund special ed because the state of Minnesota has not stepped in and paid the bill. And so I think the choice that we should make is to take and pay this bill, make the changes that the governor and the department have recommended, such as current year funding and other reforms of rolling in transition and special ed Part C, make those changes, and then we'll all have raised the awareness that this is a very essential part of overall education funding in the state of Minnesota. I would urge members not to take $250 million out of our special ed proposal here and put it over into basically the foundation formula. Our hope is that this we can raise additional revenues, hopefully, to do that later. But let's take care of a problem that's been hanging over our shoulders for a number of years, and one that I think all of us could go home and feel very proud about. So I would urge your no vote on this amendment.
Senator Vandeveer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Well, Senator Stump, that sounds really good, and I'm sure your effort was to pick up the special ed costs, but in the end, we have to look at the result. And the result, looking at these runs, is not good. I mean, compared to the governor's bill, this is just, you know, this is, I don't know what word to use, but at any rate, it doesn't work for any of the schools I represent. It's far short of, one, what they would need, and number two, the way that it's divided up across the state, I don't even think it serves the state well. I think in the end we have to look at the result of what the objective was, and I guess I don't think it fits Minnesota today. So I'm going to vote for the Wergen Amendment.
Any further discussions on the A11 Amendment? Senator Wergen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a little bit to Senator Stump. Senator Stump, I know that we have an obligation to special ed, and I know we have to take care of it. And Senator Stump, I'm not roll calling this amendment for a specific reason. It is not an amendment that is to get anybody. It's not a political amendment. It's an amendment to point out the problems that we have with the funding formula and how the disparity is getting greater and greater from district to district. And members, if you do nothing else, please, if you're willing to join with me to change the E12 funding formula, I'd love to hear from you. Thank you.
Any further discussions on the A11 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of the A11 amendment say aye.
Aye.
All those opposing say nay.
No.
The motion does not prevail. Any further discussion on Senate File 2095? Seeing none.
Madam President.
Senator Olson.
Madam President, Senator Stump, I appreciate the hard work you've put into this, but I wonder if you could clarify one area that is a cause of a little bit of concern for me. We've spent a lot of time talking about special education and the maintenance of effort requirement by the federal government. And have you thought about, or do you know what the implications of putting all of our revenue, our additional revenue, into special education might have if we in fact, you know that many of us on the committee have taken a great deal of interest in doing some better work, if you will, in the area of literacy, and many of the efforts have shown that we could deal with two of the fastest growing areas within special education in a more effective way within our regular school program. I know he's getting briefed here at the same time as I'm talking, but I want him to. So, Mr. Chairman, the basis for my raising the issue is, as you know, many of us have put a great deal of effort and have a great deal of concern about some of the things that we could do in reform within our regular system that would slow the growth or maybe even reduce the need for special education for many of their students, particularly in the fastest growing areas of learning difficulties and as well as to some extent in the emotional and behavioral. And if we were successful in doing that, would we be locked into the level of expenditure at the district level and at the state that this massive infusion of money into this program would require?
Senator Stumpf, do you have a desire to respond? Senator Stumpf.
Madam President and members, I think Senator Olson raises a good point and one that we've tried to consider in visiting with the department. And as you mentioned and as I mentioned earlier, that we have reinstated the growth factor that we had in law before it was taken out in 2003. The growth in special ed has been above that inflation factor, and so the belief is that at least in the very near future, what we'll do is stay, we'll try to keep even in terms of our appropriations in that area. In the long run, I think the programs that we have in the legislation, both the initial ones, the ones that, as you have brought up in the Finance Committee and also in the division, those types of programs, I think, are going to be a solution to lowering the long-term special ed costs across the state. Innovative kinds of ways of working with our younger children at an earlier age, making those investments so that many of those students never really get into the special ed arena. And I think when that occurs, I think you'll see, at least my hope is that you'll see the overall costs go down. But at least in the near run, when we make our projections, I think can safely say that the special ed costs are rising faster than what we have projected in our legislation.
Any further discussions in Senate File 2095? Seeing none. Senator Hand.
Thank you, Madam President. I have the A-10 amendment.
Senator Hand now moves to amend Senate File 2095 as follows, page 10. This is the A-10 amendment.
Senator Hand on the A-10 amendment.
Thank you, Madam President. Is the Senate under call for the balance of the proceedings of this bill?
We're already under call, Senator Hand.
Thank you, Madam President. Members, the A-10 amendment is very simple. And the intent is to do one thing. I know we've talked a lot about property taxes in the session, and there is a desire to reduce property taxes. And what I want to address and what this amendment addresses is the consolidated levy that is in this bill that I think is directed toward a couple of things, one of which is to try to bring some property tax relief to our districts. But the one thing that troubles me about this is that in the language of the bill itself, if you look on page 10, line 31 and 32, It projects the increase of this consolidated levy over the next 2 years, going into the future, making a projection 2 years in the future. But it's showing an increase in the property tax of 24%. So we have in the bill right here, the bill that we want to pass, we're going to increase property taxes by 24% in this bill. We're going to do it by passing this bill. And so what my amendment does is simply take the amount of this consolidated levy as it's defined on page 10, line 31, for 2009 and holds that dollar amount constant for later years. So it deletes the increases in 10 and 11, the out years of this budget. And so, members, I think one of the concerns that many of us have is this levy being a new statewide property tax. We had one. We eliminated it. I think this is an attempt to reinstate that. And what we have in the bill here very clearly is evidence that what we're going to do here is increase property taxes directly from this body by 24% over the next 2 years. And we shouldn't do that. If we want to take and help local districts, we could take the $100 million that we're talking about spending to reduce property taxes and just buy out two of the levies, the equity levy or the transition levy. We could probably almost exactly buy those out completely. But instead, what we're doing is we're creating a statewide property tax levy in effect. If you look at the language in this bill and the language from the old law, the old general education levy that we did away with, the language is virtually identical. And so, members, I would urge your support on the A10 amendment. And, Madam President, I'd like to have a roll call vote, please.
A roll call vote will be taken. Any further discussions on the A10 amendment? Senator Sumpf.
Thank you, Madam President and members. You know, this is a wonderful amendment. The only problem is that it costs $22 million. Chairs of the Appropriations Committees, most of them, or a number of them anyway, get really two targets to work with. One is a target in appropriations, which is really, in the case of education, it's really the aid that we send out to school districts. And then the other target is what we call the levy target. And the levy target is how much we increase or decrease the taxes across the state of Minnesota. And as I mentioned early in the discussion, one of the issues that we tried to tackle this year was to reduce property taxes across the state of Minnesota. And, of course, Senator Hand wants to help me out. The only problem is that we don't have the $22 million to do that. So, or I take that back, $44 million. It's $44 million that we would be out of balance. And so I think unless something short of a miracle and money from heaven, I'd have to ask members to not throw the bill $44 million out of whack and vote against this amendment.
Any further discussions on the A10 amendment? The secretary would take the roll on the A10 amendment. All members who want to vote, having voted, the secretary will close the roll. There being 22 ayes and 40 nays, the motion does not prevail. Any further discussions on Senate File 2095? Seeing none, Senator Senjum.
Madam Chair, Madam President, I'm sorry, I have the A14 amendment.
The Secretary will report the 814 amendment.
Senator Senja moves to amend Senate file number 2095 as follows. Page 41, delete section 24. This is the A14 amendment.
Senator Senja on the A14 amendment.
Thank you, Madam President and members. The A14 amendment has to do with a section of the bill called Parent and Family Involvement Policy. Not a bad thing when you think about it. But as it is presented in the bill, it's one more unfunded mandate on schools. Now, I will tell you, when I go to my schools, the message is usually pretty simple. See if you can get us a little bit more money, but absolutely, absolutely, and absolutely no more unfunded mandates. If you're going to tell us you're going to have to do something, we're going to have to do something. For goodness sake, send money with us. And on this particular policy and provision of this bill, I don't believe there's any money to do that. So it is one more unfunded mandate. The parent and family involvement policy requires that school boards put together a policy on, frankly, parent and family involvement. And it talks about communications between home and school that is regular, two-way, and meaningful. I'm not sure, you know, good idea, how much is that going to cost? It talks about having to put together a policy which supports parenting skills. Now, all of a sudden, we have our school boards involved in family parenting skills. I'm not sure if either they are equipped or if, them, frankly, they have desire to do that. It goes on and on. It also requires a school board to create an advisory committee. We all know schools can't create anything like that without staffing it and supporting it in many different sorts of ways. Again, all without money. Simply another unfunded mandate. I don't want to be too hard on this idea. I think the idea is good, but I would generally think most of our schools are doing this. We've got PTA organizations. We've got other organizations across Minnesota that work very, very well with our schools. I'm not sure, Madam President and members, that we need one more unfunded mandate within this particular bill falling on our school boards. They've got enough to do. I think this happens largely through volunteerism within the communities. And Madam Chair, or Madam President, if I have not so indicated, I would appreciate a roll call vote on this.
A roll call will be taken. Any further discussions on the A14 amendment? Seeing none, the Secretary would take the roll. All members who want to vote, having voted, the Secretary will close the roll. Seeing that there are 25 ayes and 36 nays, the motion does not prevail. Any further discussions on Senate File 2095? Seeing none, the Secretary will give Senate File 2095 its third reading.
Senate File 2095, a bill for an act relating to education, providing for early childhood and family, kindergarten through grade 12, and adult education, including general education, education excellence, etc.
Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Madam President. Would the author yield for a question?
Senator Stumpf will yield.
Thank you, Madam President. Senator Stumpf, we all know that this bill will enhance special education funding. We do know that there is a great need due to the fact that we, as a state and the federal government, have demanded unfunded mandates in the area of special education for many years. Many of our school districts, by the way, are welcoming the aid to special education rather than go back and add money to a general fund formula. But I don't know if we adequately discussed who would pay for this increase in funding. I'm a member of the tax committee, and we did have a pretty good discussion about that. We're putting that burden of $78 to $100 million on our business owners, on our property tax, their property taxes on business owners. And I'm very concerned that by putting another mandate of tax, added taxes on our business owners, we may be losing jobs as a result. Many of these businesses can't handle this type of increase. And what they'll do is simply lay off people. Could you tell me if there's been any analysis of whether or not that will happen? Is that a legitimate concern of mine?
Senator Stumpf.
Thank you, Madam President. And Senator Limmer, I enjoyed the conversation in the Tax Committee as the members were vigorously discussing this issue, and it is from my understanding of that discussion that the proposal that you see before you, there is no tax increase, and that the current funds that we have, the current target that we have, is adequate to cover both the provisions in the special ed area as well as the property tax relief across the state.
Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Madam President. Senator Stumpf, we're increasing education funding in this bill. Is that correct? And are you telling us today that there is no net increase in where that money will come from, even though we are increasing our spending on education, whether it goes to special education, whether it goes to general formula allowances, that there's a no net gain in increase in tax revenue that's needed for this?
Senator Pogamiller.
Senator Limmer, if you will permit me, correct. This is what Senator Stumpf's committee is able to fund with the resources that are available without a tax increase. That is exactly correct.
The Secretary will.
Madam President.
Senator Day.
Madam Chairman, Senator Stumpf, most of my constituents, and I personally thought that this was going to be a good year for education. I mean, I thought we had some dollars, and you know, we got a budget that's going over, when I look at it, I mean, I thought we're going to have a Clydesdale education budget, and you know, you're bringing out a pony, and I can hear the people down in my district. I can see it now. They're probably down there talking. If they listen to this, they're going to say, you know, shoot low, they're riding Shetlands. You know, we had these extra dollars, and we're all expecting, and we thought anyway, that we're going to put a chunk of the money into education. And it seems somehow, I don't know where all you guys are putting all the extra money, but we got health and human coming yet, but so far, everything's been way under the governor's recommendation, and I guess in some areas I didn't mind until we got to today. So I feel kind of bad. I actually thought that education was the high priority of most everybody in this room today, and so what we're doing is we're really shirking our responsibility, but maybe I'll have to bone up a little bit on the education in Minnesota to find out why it is that we're sitting here today, and all of a sudden education has become a a second class compared to the other budget bills that we're going to push through. So,
Senator Stumpf.
Thank you, Madam President, and Senator Day. It's probably a pony in terms of size, but it's not a trick pony. And it's what you see is what you get. The target that we had was roughly half of the spending that we have available, because in education, most of the money is ongoing. So when you spend a dollar in this biennium, it's going to cost in the next biennium. And so it is a very straightforward budget. Not a lot of smoke, or there's no smoke and mirrors. We try to do two things. We try to pay a bill that all of us are grappling with, so that we can free up dollars in our districts. And the other one is to reduce property taxes across the state by $110 million.
Senator Gerlach.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would just like to speak a little bit in conclusion about this as we wrap this bill up. I'm certainly no expert in education finance or education issues. This is my first year on this committee, and I look at it and I see that really there's two sides to education as we try to address the issue in our state. Certainly one is adequate funding. We talk about this. In fact, that the funding issue seems to take up probably 98% of the discussion. Wherever we're at, it's always about the funding. And it's an important part, and I agree with that. We should be talking about the funding. We have to have adequate funding. We have to make sure that there's money in our schools to do the things we need to do. But there's another side of the coin, and that is about the reforms. You see, the system, yes, it needs the money, but it also needs constant attention on what the system is doing. Is the system giving us what we want for our money? Is it delivering the education we need for the century we're looking forward to, not the century we've just left? Reforms are absolutely critical. If the debate is entirely about money, or even the 95% it is, or 98% it is, I think we're lost. I think we're lost. We had a long, long list of bills we heard in committee this year, and bill after bill was about a particular school district with a particular funding problem, an issue. They needed a tweak on a levy formula. They needed to be allowed to extend a certain date on something or whatever it was. And it was just bill after bill after bill. We spent a little bit of time, but very little, on substantive reforms about where our education system is going in Minnesota. We had a big political change last year in the election. We have some new folks running the show. We have the DFL is putting forth now really an unfettered steamroller of an agenda on this. You hold all the cards. There's nothing we can do about it. The bill you put forth addresses some funding issues, but it does lack anything with reforms. In fact, it goes in the reverse. We have, Minnesota has been is the leader in charter schools in this country. It's where it came from. And the reason is because we've recognized that in schools, one size does not fit all. And so we have developed a system over the last years that says, let's allow for some options, a little bit of choice and a little bit of the way we structure our schools. And now what we're doing with this bill is we're saying, stop the presses, pull the plug, halt that. No more. We've got what we're going to do with charter schools, and now we're going to stop. I think it's a grave, grave injustice on an education reform movement that we began here in Minnesota. Quality compensation, or QComp, we fought and fought for that last year because our compensation system, we know, is broken. It's based on an industrial model of this past century. It's a post-war system of just paying for longevity, just paying for filling a space, and not based on who's really contributing to the product of education, who's really doing the best, for our children. So we finally got something last year. We fought for it, and now we're saying, nope, we want to stop that. We want to go back. We want to stop that reform. Let's go back to the way we were. Steps and lanes or the industrial model of the last century is good enough for us. And I had hoped that my time on this committee would have been, I would have been exposed to some of the bolder ideas about what we're going to do about education. And I found that instead it seems to be just a whimper. It's just about the money. It's not about anything to deal with the system and what we're doing with our kids. It's just a whimper, and I'm disappointed in that. I'll be voting no today. Thank you.
Senator Pogomiller.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I typically won't get up on funding bills, but Senator Gerlach, this is an issue I do know something about. I chaired the committee for 8 years. What has happened in Minnesota? Under Governor Carlson's leadership, we fulfilled our responsibility, our moral imperative, and did our portion on special education. If you saw, or most of you I'm sure did read the newspaper yesterday, in 1957, Al Quie came to the Minnesota legislature. And what did he work on? Taking care of the children most needy in our society. Minnesota led the nation in this area. Under governors of both political parties. What has happened in the last 4 years? There's a leak in the boat. You can tell people you're putting money into education by putting money on the formula and not fund the special ed mandate. And school districts are worse off. That's what's happening in Minnesota today, as this article so clearly pointed out. And as Senator Rummel has pointed out in the Education Committee, you were there, Senator Gerlach. You can tell Mankato you're going to put $200 on the formula and then underfund them $437 in special education. That's just not honest. That is not honest. Why do Minnesotans think that some statewide politicians say, I'm funding education, I put X dollars into the formula? And they go, oh, that sounds good. And then they go to their local school district and find out that class sizes are going up, property taxes are going up, they're losing music, they're paying fees for sports. Why is that? Why is that? It's what Senator Rummel has pointed out. She's new to the Senate. She came in as a school board member and said, gee, why don't we talk about the real issues in education? You know what the real issue is? Our lack of funding to special education. We are fooling Minnesotans if we don't fund that. You can put 2 or 3 or 4% on the formula and not properly fund education and still not have any money for districts to do the other things they want to do. That's what's the truth. We all know it. Certainly a member of the Education Finance Committee knows that, Senator Gerlach. It's time for this Senate to stand up and be straightforward and honest to Minnesotans about what the issues are. And the issues are, you simply have to fulfill the commitments you've made before you promise new spending. Senator Stumpf has bit the bullet. He said, we're going to pay his committee. We're going to pay for promises that have been made since 1957 when Al Quie came here as a freshman legislator. The new Al Quie is Senator Rummel. She's going to tell it the way it is. She's a former school board member. She's not some politician running statewide saying I'm funding education. She's not running out and trying to pitch charter schools versus the basic education. And let's talk about charter schools. I was a co-author of charter schools. I'm for charter schools. Here's the facts. Charter schools don't do special education students. Maybe they should. Charter schools take kids that our public schools, in many cases, have not been able to work with. That's how a special ed kid gets to charter school. That's a failure of our inability to properly fund special education. We shouldn't be proud of that. The mere fact that the growth in charter schools is as rapid as it is now, with a decline in our other portion of public schools, the basic infrastructure is declining, should make us all concerned about the future of this state. You can't tell people you're properly funding education if you don't fix this leak in special ed. None of this $400 or $500 million that this bill puts into special ed goes to special ed. You know why? Because special education already gets its money because it's a federal mandate. That is being funded in our schools. What's not being funded? Class size reduction, music, science and technology. That's what's not being funded because of the cross-subsidy of general education dollars to special ed. That's the facts. That's the reality. And Senator Gerlach, I chaired the committee for 8 years. This is exactly what we should do with the resources that we have. This is the right thing to do. We have to quit telling people that you can reform the high schools, or you can do Q-Comp, or you can do some other bell or whistle without funding the basic enterprise. It's time to fund the basic enterprise. Then we can move to these other things that people feel are so important. But to tell people you're going to reform high schools when they're barely able to keep their head above water because of the special education cross subsidy, that's just not honest. That's just not straightforward. That's not transparent. This session with the new leadership, you mentioned the new leadership in the legislature. I'll tell you what this new leadership's going to do. We're going to be straightforward and honest about what the choices are in Minnesota. You could put 3% on the formula and not do as much for education as this bill is going to do today. That's a fact. That's a fact. And so before you go out promising 3% on the formula, or 2% on the formula, or money for APIB, or money for technology, fund what we've already committed to fund. And we made a commitment. Al Cui made a commitment. Stanley Holmquist made a commitment. Roger Moe, Arnie Carlson, Rudy Perpich. We made a commitment to fund this, and it's time we do it. Even Governor Ventura funded it. And since we're in the spirit of bipartisanship, I'll leave it at that, but I think you get my meaning. It's the last 4 years where we have failed to fund our moral imperative for our public schools.
Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Madam President, and Senator Pogue-Miller and Senator Stump. I was thinking very carefully to the answers that you, both of you, gave me regarding the tax consequences of this bill. I listened carefully to the technical answers you gave me, that this bill is somehow balanced, that there's no tax increase in this particular bill. We talked about, and I inquired about, the cost to business, and somehow I didn't get the complete answer. So, in the interest of transparency, in the interest of being straightforward, in the interest of being honest, let's just make sure we realize what we're going to be deciding in the next few minutes. The fact is, this bill relies on a $78 million increase from statewide business property taxes. And that it's not in this bill, but it relies on the funding that's going to come out of the tax bill. You and I may disagree with it, but the fact remains we need to raise this money somehow. And there's $78 million that need to be raised. That funding is going to come from business property taxes. There's no question about it. We had to force the tax committee to hear a comment from the business partnership in the last few days on Saturday. They were given a 3-minute opportunity to either speak on the tax bill or speak on the education bill. Senator Pogue-Miller, you urged the chairman to allow them to speak both times. both on the education bill as well as on the upcoming tax bill. And I'm glad we had that. The American democratic system relies on citizens speaking to and with government. That opportunity is in our committee process. Nowhere else on the face of the earth do we have an opportunity to give citizens an opportunity to tell us what to do, tell us how things can benefit the citizens from their perspective. And it's our obligation to listen. But the fact remains, this bill needs $78 million. And the strategy is it's going to come from business property tax owners. Let's not make any qualms about it. Let's not try and give each other technical answers. Let's just realize what it is and then make an honest vote on how we will handle this priority that we call public education.
Mr. President.
Senator Pogomiller.
Madam President, this bill, Senator Limmer, you may have issues with another bill, that this bill lowers property taxes $110 million. This bill lowers property taxes. You may have an issue with another bill. Perhaps you will. And you will have ample opportunity to speak on that point. And I'm sure that Senator Bach will engage you in that exact discussion because I think he agrees with the point you just made. But this bill lowers property taxes.
The Secretary, Senator Wiggin.
Sorry, Madam Chair. Can't let you do that yet. Senator Pogomiller, every argument has two sides. I think we all know that in this place. We get used to that, and sometimes our stomachs tie up in knots when we think about both sides. One of the things that didn't get mentioned when you were talking is that when we fund the general education formula, we are also funding special education students the same as we are other students. So we aren't taking away from special ed by funding the general education formula, as you were kind of indicating. We're not funding them adequately, I'll admit that, but we're not taking away from them by funding the general education formula. But by going through the general education formula, as skewed as it is at this point in time, and it's in desperate need of change, but by going through the general education formula, we are funding every child in the state of Minnesota on a far more equal basis than through this bill. And let me give you just a little bit of a hint of how things change by putting things through the special education formula instead of the general education formula. I had a run done by Senate fiscal staff that just asked, if the special ed money were put on the general education formula, how would that affect each of the districts? And there are a couple of scenarios, and I could spend, you know, a half hour going through all 340 plus districts, but I won't do that. But I think it's pretty hard to explain to Aiken, Minnesota, that because we put money on the special ed formula instead of the general ed formula, they're going to get $228 less per student in their entire district. That doesn't help them. And it doesn't help St. Francis that they're going to get $240 less per student by putting the funding on the special education formula. And Senator Pogomiller, I have to explain to Foley, Minnesota, why they're going to get $180 less per student. I don't know who has Springfield, Minnesota, but they get $245. Well, Senator Fredrickson does. His students get $245 less per student. But let's take a real drastic one. I don't know who represents Cromwell. I'm not being partisan. But they get $446 less per student. Rochester Senator Lynch gets $206 less per student by putting the money on the special education formula instead of the general education formula. And the list goes on and on. You know, I have to explain to Isle, Minnesota, where they have a high Native American population, and they have several circumstances that they're dealing with in a pretty tough way, and guess what? They're going to get $245 less per student by putting this money on the general education formula. Oh, I could just, I'm sorry, I could just go on and on. Becker, 238 less, you know, 224 less for the city of Malacca. And each of us have schools here that are going to get less per student because we're putting the money on the formula. But, you know, there are some folks that can really smile. There really are. Senator Clark, you and I both represent St. Cloud. Although you represent a far larger portion of the district than I do, and I really can understand why you'd vote for this bill, because St. Cloud gets $398 more by going to the special ed formula as opposed to the general education formula. So in this bill, I do not disagree with anybody that we need to do something for special education, but we cannot do it at the peril of the general fund totally, and that's what we're doing. So, you know, anybody that wants this run later on, I'll make it available to you. But it's not the right way to fund education to put it all on the special ed formula, because all of our students should benefit, and all of our students do benefit through the general education formula, but not all of our students. Yeah, well, there's an argument that could be made. Yes, I know. In a roundabout way, everybody benefits. But it makes the disparity from district to district larger and larger and larger unless we do something on a per pupil basis or the general education formula. And so even though Senator Stumpf has worked hard at this bill, I do not think it's the right way to move forward funding education.
Senator Hand, and then in Senator Metzen's words, I think we're getting to a vote. Senator Hand.
Thank you, Madam President, and or is it Madam Chairman at this point?
Madam President.
Thank you, Madam President. And we'll try to take Senator Metzen's advice and speed this along. Just a couple of comments. One is that, as Senator Worgan pointed out, when we do this with special education, we are making choices. Some districts will benefit substantially. Some will not, as opposed to putting the money on the general formula. That is true. Some will be winners. Some will be losers. It's not a bad thing to spend money on special education. We know that. It does raise a few problems. Senator Olson mentioned earlier some things that may affect us later on with respect to maintenance of effort, with respect to the lack of flexibility that we may create in Senate in school districts as they lock into this amount of spending and have to continue to maintain that level of spending and increase it from this point forward. One thing that we should know, Department of Education looks at special education spending since 1999 to the year 2005. In that six-year period, special education spending grew by 42%. 42% increase in special education spending at a time when the total enrollment of the state declined almost 2%. Now, we did not talk in our committees at all about why we're seeing the rapid, better than inflation rate of increase in special education spending. We didn't look at that at all. We didn't ask any questions about why do some districts spend a whole lot of money, other districts spend less money, what are the different things that we're trying to address, how successful. None of that was asked or answered when we talked about funding special education. We looked at the fact that there was a gap, a cross subsidy, so to speak. We looked at that, we identified how much that was, and we said we're going to fill that gap. And that's what we've done. But I'm suggesting that doesn't solve the problem, that we have not looked at the structure of spending. And it doesn't apply just to special education. I think it applies to all of education. In the last couple of months, I've looked at every school district in the state, the financial reporting on the Department of Education website. There is not a single school district in the state that hasn't spent better than the rate of inflation on a per pupil basis in the last dozen years. The average across the state is 123% above the rate of inflation. We are spending a lot of money. We're going to spend a lot of money on special education. The real question is, are we seeing improvement? Are we getting better? Do we know what we're trying to do? Have we defined that clearly? Are we putting in place programs that are going to make those changes occur? And I suggest we have not spent any time in this session looking at the reforms that would get to improving how we do education, and we need to do that. And to that end, I guess, and my last comment would be on QCOMP. And I was very disappointed to see in this bill the fact that we were going to diminish, do away with, say there's QCOMP districts in place, but there will be no more going forward. I think it's a very bad message. We talk about reform. Here was a program that was working. We had testimony in the Senator Wieger's committee from a number of districts, number of places, and some in Senator Stump's committee. There was no testimony from anybody that said the QCOMP program wasn't working well. In fact, we heard just the opposite. We heard that it was working well. People liked it. They wanted to continue it. But now we're going to just take it out, even though we had no testimony about this, no criticism of the program. And I think it raises some real questions for districts that have QCOMP. I have three school districts in my Senate district. All three of them have been approved for QCOMP funding. And maybe, Senator Stumpf, you can help me answer that. What am I going to tell them when they say, how long does this program last? Do we have it next year, the year after? When does it go away? Now that we've put in place in the Senate bill the message that we are not going to do any more QCOMP, how long can we rely on this program being in place? I think we've sent a very negative message to the districts that currently have QCOMP programs, and we need to do better than that. We need to make sure that we send the message that we're going to sustain and support the reforms and improvements that they put in place instead of cutting the rug out from under them. And so, Senator Stump, maybe if I may and ask permission from our chair, if you may comment about what message do we give to the districts that currently have this? How long can they expect this program to be in place? Can we give them assurance that they're going to be able to sustain this effort, that they have bargained with their employee groups, put in place with agreement? How long are they going to be able to sustain this?
Senator Stump.
Madam President and Senator Han, in that long discourse, I think there are a lot of different points. What the legislation does, it takes the districts that are currently belong in the QCOMP and those that are in the immediate pipeline and does not change a thing. From the school district's perspective, they won't notice any difference whatsoever. But because the department had made such generous projections, that is what we ended up using for some of the property tax reductions that you have in the bill. I think the rationale behind it is that, as you know, when we had a lot of discussion 2 years ago. A new program like this generally takes 5 to 7 years just to find out if it's doing what you want it to do. Sure, there was testimony in favor of it from the districts that received the $260, but 34 districts get $260 per pupil. All the rest of them get nothing. So I think it is good to study a program. And if you go back to the profiles of learning, it didn't take too many dollars to coax all the districts in because of the extra money. And I think the testimony in Senator Wieger's committee, there were some that did not receive it that had applied for it, and so it's not totally uniform. I believe it was one of the school districts that voted to have it in, and then they voted to take it out. So it's not... It's still in study phase. And when you talk about reforms, we do have a number of things in the bill that tries to address the reforms, whether it's in the STEM, the science, technology, and engineering programs, the professional teaching encouragement for that area, the RTI, a number of excellence kinds of initiatives that are very worthwhile. So I would say that on the whole, yes, we could do better, and if we had the resources, but the two major items that are in this proposal, one is to pay a past bill that's pushing our districts into financial ruin, which in essence, when we do that, frees up the dollars so those districts can provide programs. As Senator Pogomiller mentioned, the special ed costs are paid. They're either paid by program cuts or they're paid by property tax increases. And many superintendents that I talked to, in fact, all of them that I talked to, said, take care of this bill first. And many of them, the referendums that they've passed has just gone to offset the cross-subsidy that they have in their districts. In fact, one superintendent that I talked to said that if the constituents in his district knew where the referendum money went, he would never be able to pass another referendum. And so I think it's to our benefit to take care of this expense. The other area is the property tax reduction, the $110 million. It's very needed out there. And I know this past weekend, as short as it was, I got our new property tax statements, and property taxes are going up very quickly, and neighbors that I talk to are concerned. So this proposal reduces property taxes across the state to the tune of $109-110 million, and that is needed. And so I think I would urge members to support this, and if we have another proposal to add additional money for education, I'd ask you to support that as well.
Having already been given its third reading, the Secretary will take the roll on Senate File 2095. All members who desire to vote on this bill, having voted, the Secretary will close the roll. There being 50 ayes and 12 nays, Senate File 2095 is passed and its title agreed to. Oh, Senator Koch votes aye. There being 52 ayes and 12 nays, Senate File 2095 passes and its title agreed to. It is 51 ayes and 12 nays. Okay.
Mr. President.
Thank you. Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. President, I move that Senate File 2095 be laid on the table.
On the motion, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion prevails.
Mr. President, I'd like to revert to messages. I just did.
Without objection, under motions, we'll go to messages.
Mr. President, I have the honor to announce that the House refuses to concur in the Senate amendments to House File 274, a bill for an act relating to the Rural Finance Authority, providing for sale of bonds and appropriating money. The House respectfully requests a conference committee of three be appointed thereon. Representatives Junkie, Otremba, and Finstad have been appointed as such committee on the part of the House. House File Number 274 is herewith transmitted to the Senate with the request that the Senate appoint a like committee, signed Albany Mathew as Chief Clerk of the House of Representatives.
Senator Vickerman.
Mr. President, I move that the Senate accede to the request of the House for a conference committee on House File Number 274 and that a conference committee of three members be appointed by the subcommittee and committees on part of the Senate to act like a conference committee appointed on part of the House.
On the Vickerman motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. President, I'd like to move a brief recess to appoint a conference committee.
All in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Senate's in a brief recess. Sedgem.
Senate will be in order. Senator
Mr.
Bickerman.
President, is there a privilege report at the desk?
There's a privilege report at the desk. Senator Pogermiller from the Subcommittee on Conference Committees recommends the following senators be and hereby appointed as a conference committee on House File 274. Senators Vickerman, Erickson, Ropes, and Hand. Senator Pogermiller moves the foregoing appointments be approved.
On the motion, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion prevails.
Mr. Senator. President, I'd like to move to introductions. I'd move that we take up introductions.
Okay, there's one to be read. Staying on motions, there's bill introductions.
Aye.
What's that?
Senators Langseth, Cohen, Pappas, Senjamin, Metzen introduce Senate File 2157, a bill for an act relating to capital improvements, authorizing spending to acquire and better public land and buildings, other improvements of a capital nature with certain conditions, establishing new programs, modifying existing programs, authorizing sale of state bonds, etc.
Without objection, be sent to the Finance Committee.
We have another one? Is there any other work at the desk? Mr. President, here's the plan.
That's all the work at the desk, Senator Pogermiller.
Mr. President, here's the plan. We're going to recess to the call of the chair. But that is only for the purpose of taking a couple committee reports from the Finance Committee later this evening. Senator Senjum and I have visited, and there will be several of us here to do that when the Finance Committee completes its work. It's to accept the committee reports on the Economic Development Bill, assuming it gets out of the Finance Committee, and the Environment Bill. Assuming it gets out of the Finance Committee. And so there's no need for members to stay for that purpose. We will just come back in order, accept those two committee reports, and then adjourn for the day. The plan then is tomorrow to meet at noon and take up the Economic Development and the Environment Bill, the two bills that I was just speaking of. We would take those up on the floor tomorrow. And if we would slow down that session if it was necessary for members to have time to prepare amendments to that those two bills. But from what we've been able to pick up, that should not become a problem. Apparently members know what's in those two bills pretty much already, but and then the rest of the planning for the rest of the week is Wednesday the Omnibus Capital Investments, Wednesday the Omnibus Judiciary, Health and Human Services at Thursday at noon, and then Friday, the Omnibus Tax Bill. And there were other bills that were in the email. I think we're taking the smoking bill tomorrow, if I'm recalling correctly. Anyhow, they were in the email the other day. So, Mr. President, I would move, if there are no announcements, I would move recess to the call of the chair.
Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do have some ballots for those of you who haven't voted for topics for the Legislative Audit Commission. If you'd like to get one from me, this is your last chance. The deadline is today.
Yeah. Senator Moore.
Mr. President, members of the Judiciary Committee will be meeting in room 107 30 minutes after adjournment.
Senator Rest.
Thank you, Mr. President. The Committee on State and Local Government Oversight and whatever, we'll be meeting at 4 o'clock.
Senator Cohn.
Mr. President, Finance will meet in 20 minutes.
Senator Wieger.
Mr. President, Education Committee will meet at 3:40.
Senator Moi.
Mr. President, just in case there's a confusion, it'll be 30 minutes after recess.
Okay. Without objection, we've got Senator Foley and Higgins will be excused from all day session. Rest. Senator Rest from 12 to 12:30, Senator Neville from 12 to 1:15, Senator Ortman from 1:25 to 1:40, Senator Murphy 1 o'clock on, and Senator Ortman at 2 o'clock on. Senator Senjum.
Mr. President, the Senate Republican members will caucus at 5 o'clock in the State Office Building conference room to talk about tomorrow's bills.
Senator Rest.
Mr. Chair, President, I just wanted to add to that State and local government will be meeting in room 112 rather than our usual meeting room, which will be used by the Finance Committee. 112.
Further announcement, Senator Pogue. Senator Clark.
Yes, there will be a DFL caucus tomorrow morning at 11 o'clock in room 112.
I'd renew my motion for a recess to the call of the chair.
Senator Pogamiller renews his motion to recess to the call of the chair. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Senate stands in recess.
Senator Pogamiller.
Madam President, I'd like to take the motion here first. I'd like to move that House File 1033 be drawn from the Committee on Judiciary and referred to the Committee on Rules and Administration for comparison with Senate File 927.
All in favor say aye. Opposed? Motion prevails.
Madam President.
And without objection, we'll revert to reports. Senator Pogamiller.
Madam President, I'm...
They'll be read by the Secretary. Sorry, Senator Pogamiller. It's three to be read.
Senator Cohen from the Committee on Finance, to which was referred Senate File 2096, a bill for an act relating to state government appropriating money for environmental, natural resources, and energy purposes, etc. Report the same back with the recommendation that the bill be amended, and when so amended, the bill do pass. Again, Mr. Cohen from the Committee on Finance, Senate File 276, bill for an act relating to insurance, creating a statewide health insurance pool for school district employees and appropriating money. Report the same back with the recommendation the bill be amended, and when so amended, the bill do pass. And Senate File 2089, bill for an act relating to state government appropriating money for jobs and economic development purposes, etc. Report the same back with the recommendation the bill be amended, and when so amended, the bill do pass.
Senator Pogamiller, call adopt reports.
Madam President, I move that the reports in the addendum, the reports just read by the Secretary, be adopted.
On that motion, all in favor say aye. Opposed? Motion adopted. Next order is sixth order of business, second reading of Senate bills.
Senate files 2096, 276, and 2089.
Second reading.
Is there any other work at the desk, Madam Chair?
That's all the work at the desk, Senator Pogamiller.
Any announcements? I would then move that the Senate adjourn till Tuesday, March 27th, 12 noon.
On that motion, all in favor? Opposed? Senate's adjourned.